Hello again, and welcome to another fun-filled episode of Monday Night Magic here on the MTGcast Network. I've been working on my radio voice.
Your radio voice?
My radio voice.
That's very impressive.
That sounds like bad anime dub voice.
Yes, it is.
Excellent.
Let's be real. Which of these careers am I more likely to get?
That is a good point. I mean, you're already in radio, and it doesn't pay nothing.
Nary a thing.
So yes, I'm Chewy. Hi there.
Hi.
Bill's over there.
Hi.
Squeeze over there.
Hi.
Oh my god. Clues is scuba diving somewhere in the... Where is he?
We'd sing a song about where he's at and how it's better and all that, but then Disney would sue us, so.
Okay, see, I was gonna do something like, who plays with Merfolk under the sea? Dr. Science.
Ooh, that would have been much better. Especially if you could actually do that creepy voice.
But I don't know. He's not absorbent and yellow and porous, but he's... It's Bowtied would be something and something, and Bowtied is he. Dr.
He's got a bow tie. Now listen to chorus. Dr. Science.
That's terrible. That didn't, very terrible. That didn't fit the rhythm at all.
But... Not even. Which is why I have to stick to bad anime dubs.
Yes. My radio voice. Anyway, so yes, Clues is scuba diving somewhere, wherever the hell Clues is. Jack is on daddy duty because the little one is apparently not feeling well, which means it's just us.
Stuck with us.
Yup. Did he say justice? No, just us. But I can't remember what that's from either.
I don't remember either.
I think there was an episode of Darkwing Duck that was entitled Just Us, Justice Ducks.
I believe that entirely.
And that makes me happy. Anyway, so let's talk about Magic. The big news is, well, obviously the big news is Star City Games States was this weekend.
Yeah, there were like 50 of those.
I couldn't do it with a straight face. I'm sorry.
I want to know what the turnout was at States Hawaii. That's what I want to know.
Well, considering I'm sure most of the people playing in the Pro Tour weren't actually from Hawaii, I'm sure it was fine.
Well, what I'm imagining is people who like scrubbed out on Friday were like, there's a plan B.
Yeah.
Go down the street, or I guess go across the water. I don't know where this is in Hawaii. Go to the nearest volcano and play there. They're very extreme. Mono Red always wins. It's great. That's where Clues really is.
So, yeah, no one cares about Star City Games States. And if you do, sorry, but it's just yeah. You.
As it turns out, there are multiple people doing multiple states multiple times a year, and it's like The Incredibles said, you know, when everyone's special, no one's special. So.
Everyone's special. Dash. Who names a kid with super speed Dash?
Someone who grew up on comic books? I don't know.
Oh, right. Okay. I guess they didn't know he had super speed, so.
Yeah. Apparently, it's not till they're a baby and the plot demands it that they get superpowers.
Oh, okay. What's freaking FF Freak? There we go.
What is FF Freak's superpower? Being pretty good at magic, I think.
Hey, look, you were right. I remember Brad Nelson said something about States, and so I just pulled up his Twitter account, and the last tweet here says, I mean, the PT semis is cool and all, but more importantly, I'm 3-0 in the Honolulu States, getting those SCG points.
Wow.
So yeah, Brad Nelson scrubbed and went to play States.
Huh. Well, there you have it then.
Ain't that about a bitch.
Okay. It's one of those things where you win States, but you still don't really feel that good.
Sorry. I mean, I assume he scrubbed. I assume he was queued for the Pro Tour. I just assume that. I don't know if that's right or not. But since he was in Honolulu, I assume that he... Wait, he said Honolulu States? How does that work?
Well, you see, Hawaii is the name of an island and the name of a state. So I have to assume that Honolulu is also the name of a state if it's the name of an island.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. I thought Honolulu was a city.
I don't know.
I don't either.
Let's ask Clues when he comes up from the water. He doesn't know.
What?
I'm just saying, I haven't seen him since the Blood Moon. He could just be in his happy place.
There was a Blood Moon?
Like a week ago.
Oh, well, how about that? What's a Blood Moon? I thought that just turned things in the mountains.
I mean, it does that, too. I mean, if you'll notice that whenever the actual Blood Moon happens, if you go out into the country, there's mountains out there, so.
That is true. And just for that night, too, it's weird.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's... Till somebody dispels it, I guess. Disenchant.
I was going to say, wrong game. Wrong game.
Naturalize.
Okay, what is...
Spring cleaning.
What is a blood moon? The night of October 7th and 8th in 2014. Okay. Oh, it's a lunar eclipse.
Yeah, I think they call it that because red.
Why? Okay. Why is it called a blood moon? Oh, and that's relatively recent. It used to be called a lunar eclipse, and then stupid people took over. Excellent. Okay.
This is what happens when you get rid of extended, guys.
So you mean there was, you haven't seen Clues since the lunar eclipse. I think if Clues heard you call it a blood moon, he would go, ha! At the magic reference, and then he would punch you.
That's probably likely to happen, but that's why he's underwater right now, and I can say whatever I want.
That is true. So, how about those blood moons? Anyway, okay, let's talk about the freaking Pro Tour. So, after years of working for it and working for it and working for it, Ari Lax has won his first Pro Tour. And when I say won his first Pro Tour, I don't think it was his first Pro Tour, but it was definitely his first Pro Tour top eight.
Yes.
And he won, because why not? And it's also the first time he'll be a Platinum Pro. So he just went, ba-ba-bam, got it. Yeah. So that's pretty cool. We had Ari Lax on this show once or twice. I'm thinking maybe once. And I've asked him three questions several times. He's a pretty good guy, which makes some of the things we're going to be saying shortly a little more weirder. But I don't think there's any... I don't think he's a bad guy outside of a magic table, but lots of people lost their minds for reasons I don't understand about Ari Lax winning the Pro Tour and accusations of not being – no, wait. What's the word? Unsportsmanlike. Accusations of being unsportsmanlike started to creep out, and which means it hit Twitter and exploded because that's what happens when you get a bunch of people on Twitter.
Yeah, there was a lot of vitriol towards him, even in the Twitch chat while it was happening. So it was sort of inevitable that if he did anything at all, that they were going
to
freak out.
I was going to say, to be fair, the Twitch chat actually has replaced YouTube comments as the worst place on the internet.
Yeah, I think the only place that's actually worse is if you go to a local news website during political season and you read the comments there.
Okay, yeah.
But that's a seasonal problem.
That is true, yeah. Twitch chat for something big like this is going to be always bad.
It was pretty terrible. I was watching the, I watched the pretty much all of the top eight on it because it takes all day.
Yeah. It
does. And whenever things would come up or like anything vaguely negative, you would just see all of these like comment deleted, like whoever the Twitch moderators are, they're essentially sitting there with their finger over the delete button and just mashing it because they have to, because these people are awful. So. They're not representative of our entire community, and I'm very glad they are being muted one at a time.
Thank goodness. Yeah, I know Star City doesn't even bother to try to moderate their Twitch chat, or at least they didn't used to. I don't know if they still do, or if they still don't, because it's the worst thing ever. But
you don't benefit from reading it.
The problem is it's not just Twitch chat. It's some other people, most notably Chris Pakula, threw up a video from, I think, round 10 and was like, I don't believe you did this. And what you see is...
Is this the thing during the draft?
Yeah, yeah. He's playing against, was it Yuya?
I think it was Yuya Watanabe, yeah.
Okay, yeah. And this is still in the Swiss. Or the draft. Is the draft still considered Swiss? Whatever, you know what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, it's still a Swiss setup.
It was before the top eight.
Yeah.
But, apparently, he'd had, Ari had had the win in hand this whole time and could not find white mana, and he finally fetch land, go get a plains, drop Zergo Helm Smasher, and he like threw it down sideways, like over on like Yuya's side of the board.
It ended up on the wrong side of the board, and you could tell from watching it that he was just so excited that he was like, bam, look at it, I got it, we're great. And he was clearly excited because he'd been waiting to do this for a long time. But what you're seeing when you're watching it without a lot of context is it looking like he's just showing off and throwing it down and just being like, I own this board. But that's not what actually happened. So.
Yeah. And I watched, admittedly, I didn't watch anything, but I watched the finals and then the post-finals interview with Ari, and I saw nothing wrong. Like maybe a little tiny bit overbearing, but he's a Magic player.
Well, specifically, he's a Magic player that just won $40,000.
Yeah.
And when they were playing that last round, $20,000 was on the line, along with getting on the train and the trophy and the fact that this is like a high point in your career, no matter how good you are at Magic. And there's a lot of stress going back and forth. There were some really high tense, like, moments when they're just looking at their hands and they're trying to come up with every way they can resolve a situation. So yeah, when you're at that point, you're not showing off for the camera. You are focusing on what's going to go on, and intense things will happen.
Yeah. And so in the last game, let's run through this real quick. In the last game, Arlax was dead with the cards in Sean McLaren's hand. Arlax was dead. Like, he's going to lose right now. He draws and plays a Siege Rhino. That puts him out of range of death.
Out of immediate burn range through the Drain Through Life effect, yeah.
Yeah. And so now Sean McLaren is like, and Ari's got nothing to do now but win. But he doesn't know that yet. And you could tell he's expecting to die.
Yeah, for reference, so he gains a little bit of life, and that's great. And then McLaren immediately, like, dumps all the burn in his hand to get him to one life. And when you're one life against a deck that is heavy red and has a lot of card draw at a point in the game where they can cast anything they draw, there's, like, 12 cards left in his deck that if he top decks any of them, he will just win. So it's pretty high stress.
Yeah, and Sean McLaren, God bless him, he pulled the top card of his library off and, like, covered it up and peeked at it to where nobody but Sean McLaren could see it. And because he wanted to know if he just won the round, so, or won the game, so he could go to the next match of the round, you know, or of the finals.
Yeah, because this is game four.
This is game four.
So if Ari wins, it was 2-1. Then it's done.
And he's like, if I top deck damn near anything, I'm going to win. And he looks at it. And I thought it was really funny. The coverage guy behind him, like, ran around to see if he could see it over his shoulder. And he couldn't.
Where is your power now?
And it was not a burn spell. It was a Mantis.
It was a Mantis Rider that would not have been able to swing through.
Yeah, so he picked it up and held it for a very long time. And you could tell he wasn't slow rolling it. He was trying desperately to figure out how to not die.
Yeah, he's looking at the path. He's looking at, like, going through his head. You could tell he's like, okay, well, provided he doesn't have removal, because if he has removal, I'm just dead. So provided he doesn't have removal and I play this, I am not instantly dead. He doesn't have exact damage as long as I have a blocker. And then next turn, I might be able to draw the burn spell or the card draw or get through that.
Yeah, or a dig through time or something.
Something. Because, yeah, if he hits dig through time, he could dump his graveyard and have enough mana left to get any burn spell that would pop up in the top through. So it's very much a case of you can't look at the scenario of he has removal or you just lose, but it's still really stressful to just put it out there knowing that if he removes it at all, you are dead.
Yeah, and he finally did, and Ari shows a burn spell in his hand. Like, he counts up damage, shows a burn spell in his hand, and goes, huh? And Sean McLaren's like, okay. But he wouldn't go, you got it. He made Ari do it.
He made him absent it away.
So. Yeah. So, and then, you know, that was Ari just won a Pro Tour. And I expected him to jump up and down and lose his mind. Instead, he just gathered up his cards. And I was like, I thought this guy was a jerk. What happened to the jerkiness? And there was no jerk. I didn't think he was a jerk, but everyone was saying, well, this guy sucks.
I think a lot of the conversation started earlier on in the tournament, both after the thing that we just mentioned from the draft and also in the top eight, I think the first round of it against, against Yuya, I believe. It was a match between two, it was essentially a mirror match that was going on between the two Abzan decks. It might have been Yuya, I don't know, depending on the desk. Whatever, whoever he was playing. It was a mirror match.
First round of the top eight, it was Yuya Watanabe, yes.
Yeah, I just don't remember that's what Yuya was also playing. Oh, I have a list right here.
I was gonna say, Yuya was playing.
No, he was playing Jeskai.
Yeah,
it wasn't Yuya.
A similar deck to,
It was, Tiago Separito. It was that match. Like, they're all blurring on me because you just watched this all day long. But regardless, so he was playing that game in the top four to get to finals, and Tiago managed to completely wipe both of their boards, their hands, everything. They were both in straight top deck mode, and the very first thing that Ari does after getting to that point is he just immediately flips over an Elspeth and makes the three tokens, and then from that point on, it was just a matter of inevitability. But he got so excited when he saw it that he tossed it down, he slapped the table. And that's when people are all like, you just crushed that guy's dreams, and they're not realizing that was excitement. That was realizing he wasn't dead. So...
Yeah, I'm sorry that we're not all, you know...
We're not Miyagi here.
Yeah, we're not all... I'm trying to think of someone who is known for just being completely stoic. Like, we're not all freaking Eric Frolic. Is Eric Froelich? He doesn't show emotion when I talk to him, so I assume he doesn't show emotion when he's playing. But
I mean, when the stakes are this high, I don't hold it against anyone unless they actually just get up and teabag their opponent. And if they do that, yeah, they're a jerk. But
oh my god,
I do think that Ari is sort of the victim here. If we've all played against that guy who actually is a jerk, or they play like a jerk, and if they win, you just feel so much vitriol. And I think when people are seeing Ari get excited here, they're all just like, he's doing rub-ins, when really he's just excited for himself. So at any rate, he just won a Pro Tour, so I think he wins anyway.
Yeah, so basically what I'm saying is to everyone complaining about Ari, you know, sure, he's some of what he does might be considered kind of rude, but look at where it's coming from. It's coming from excitement. It's not coming from, in your face, bitch! It's coming from, oh my god, look what just happened. And that's a big difference. The intention is what defines a dick.
Yes.
Like, if he's doing this because, like the guys I played at the freaking pre-releases, you know, if he's doing this because, oh my god, I'm so much better than you, then that's a dick. But if he's doing this because, oh my god, I'm still playing in this Pro Tour Top 8, well, then that's excitement, and everyone with all the naysayers need to shut the hell up.
Yeah.
That's my point.
And if you've never played in a high-tension situation, then you really aren't in a good position to judge either way. So, most of you have not. This isn't just winning an F&M promo. This is a life-altering moment for him.
Yeah.
So,
I don't understand what caused the meddling mage to start. That was a little weird.
The meddling mage?
Chris Pecula.
Oh, yeah, I don't know.
He's the
meddling. I'm like, wait a minute, that's not in this format. Hold on.
He's the guy behind the meddling mage.
Right. He's meddling. It's what he does.
Womp. Hey, look, the top eight decks aren't in order.
I think what's actually going on there is that the order that they put them up in is, like, they're posted before the actual top eight happens, and they just don't go back and rearrange it.
Yeah, that's always been the case.
But it is annoying.
Usually for a Pro Tour, they do,
So
I think. So Ari was playing an Abzan mid-range deck. Now, one more thing about Ari. When he got over to the news table for the interview, the very first thing he did was start rattling off and thanking members of his playtest team.
Yeah, I didn't watch the interview, but from what I heard, he directly said that the deck that he wanted to play, they talked him out of, and he's glad they did because his deck wasn't as good as this one.
Yeah.
And that's like one of those things of like, you've just won this big tournament and you're not just going, look how awesome I am. So.
Yeah, but he immediately said, you know, I didn't build this deck, Steve Rubin did. If you want to know about card choices, when I talk to him, I can tell you why, you know, some of them got cut, but as far as overall, you got to talk to him about that. And he said that other members of his team were like, here's how you draft this format. Just shut up. This is how you do it. And he goes, and I did. So he was very humble and not at all like, woo, look at me, I'm the man.
Right.
Which, listening to social media, you'd think, you know, he jumped up and bitch slapped Yu Yu Watanabe and pissed all over his cards.
And then took $5.
And stole his wallet. Kicked a guy in a wheelchair on the way out. Like, what the hell, man? But none of that happened. He's just excited, and heaven forbid he shows some emotion, you bunch of freaking emotionless robots. Jesus.
Draft robot, not successful.
So personally, I'm glad he won, because, the other thing you have to realize is that he's just a kid. Like, he's 24, so he's not actually a kid. But trust me, when I was 24, I was just a kid. Bill?
Yeah, you're right. When you were 24, you were just a kid.
Thank you. And you didn't even know me then, but
I know, but I mean, based on who you are now, I have to assume.
but, you know.
Yeah, I mean, like, honestly, that's at a point where some people, their personality is a lot more reserved, and so you might be confusing, you know, stoicism for, or rather, you might be just confusing their normal demeanor with stoicism. Other people get really excited when something crazy happens, and that's perfectly acceptable too. So.
Yeah. So
plus, enough. Yeah, his deck is sweet.
Yeah, enough of that. Let's talk about his deck. So the Abzan mid-range deck, let's just run through it. He's playing 7 Planeswalkers.
In the main, yeah.
In the main, yeah. I forgot about the ones down here.
He's got 3 more on the board.
So he's got 2 Sorens, 2 Ajani Mentor of Heroes, the green-white one,
yep.
And 3 Elspeth. His creature base is 2 Elvish Mystic, 4 Caryatids, 4 Coursers, because duh, 2 Wingmate Rock, which is baller, and 4 Siege Rhinos, which were amazing all weekend.
Yes.
He's got 4 Thought Seizes, 4 Abzan Charms. Okay, Abzan Charm is exile a creature of power 3 or greater, draw 2 cards and lose 2 life, and distribute 2 +1/+1 counters among 1 or 2 target creatures. Okay.
Yes. 3 like charms, it's an instant, so it's always relevant.
Right. And then, like all the new charms, all 3 abilities are good.
Yeah.
3 Heroes Downfalls, 2 Utter Ends, and then, of course, a mana base that I won't bother to run through. And then in the board, there's an End Hostilities, 3 Drown in Sorrow, because Drown in Sorrow, 1 Unravel the Aether, 1 Dune Blast, 3 Bile Blight, a Liliana Vess, excuse me, a Mass Calcify for some reason, 2 Murderous Cut.
A very unplayed Mass Calcify.
Yeah, 2 Murderous Cut and 2 Nissa World Waker. So, yeah, the deck is pretty sweet.
Yep. We're going to, rather than go too far into this one, let's compare and contrast it to the other Abzan decks as they come up, because it'll be easier to tell the differences that way, because there's a bunch of them, and they're all actually kind of different. So
let's go down
to... This is flavor one.
Let's go down to Tiago Saporito, who he beat in the semis.
Okay.
Right?
Yes. Yeah, this is the one that I was just talking about a second ago.
Yeah. So this one, he's only running 2 Planeswalkers main, 2 Sorins. Mm-hmm. He's got Fleece main Lion and Anafenza the Foremost to go with his Caryatids, Coursers, Rhinos, and 4 Wingmate Rocks. How many was Ari playing?
Yep. There were only 2 in the other deck. Okay. Ari only had 2.
Gotcha.
So this one is very much a creature-based win condition rather than a Planeswalker win condition.
Yeah, he's still got Heroes Downfall, he's got 2 Bile Blight and 3 Abzan Charm in the main, a Drown in Sorrow and a Thoughtseize, and a Whip.
The Whip is important.
Yeah.
The Whip, you know, is something that you could only run with so many extra creatures, but the Whip also does a lot of damage when you've got things like Siege Rhinos and Wingmate Rocks, oddly enough, because that's pretty sweet.
Yeah,
you keep the friend.
Yeah, the Wingmate Rock buddy hangs around. Anafenza, really?
Yeah. She takes care of those graveyard decks pretty good. You want to delve? Good luck.
Sucks to be you. Yeah, she shuts down Dig Through Time. That's important.
She makes you pay for it, honestly.
Which means you don't play it.
Yeah, pretty much. She's good for that. You have to take care of her before you can dig. So hopefully you can do that. I imagine a lot of people who didn't make the top 8 couldn't. And yeah, the sideboard, though, does have 2 Elspeth in it, so she can come in when she needs to.
And it's also got 1 Stain the Mind, which, wow.
Yeah, there's a lot of cards here that I'd be talking about if the Wizards website could ever actually load card images.
Yeah, and the way it's set up, Stain the Mind is actually down far enough on the screen that when I mouse over it, I can't see the mana cost.
It is 4 and a black.
It's 4 and a black, okay. Ooh, I wonder if going full screen would help that. What button's full screen? It's F11? I can't read that from here.
I don't remember.
That one's 11. Bam!
I've got to the point where I just open each card in a new tab because it's easier to watch it that way.
There we go. Yeah, okay. Stain the Mind, for those that don't remember, because why would you? For 4 and a black with Convoke, you... What is this? Do we have a name for this effect?
Lobotomize?
Like yeah, you name a card, a non-land card, and you search target player's graveyard, hand, and library for any number of cards with that name and exile them. So, what was the one with... Phyrexian Mana that did that. Surgical Extraction.
Yes.
Maybe Extract is what we'll call that.
Extract is a good word for it, because you're literally extracting the cards
yeah.
from your deck. So,
yes.
By way of their brain.
Buh.
Yeah, well, Phyrexian Man.
So that's...
But yeah, so it's a much more creature-y, much more aggressive strategy. The Fleece Mane Lion being the main differentiator, since that's something that starts messing people up early on, and if you can monster it, it pretty much becomes the answer to half of your opponent's deck.
Yeah. Ari Lex said that in the interview, the Fleece Mane Lion's got cut because Siege Rhino is a 4/5.
Yeah.
And Fleece Mane Lion was just not enough to handle it, so out it came.
I mean, its main job is to become the 4/5 indestructible and then use Sorin to push it over the top. In fact, a lot of the main job of Sorin's
Solemn Visitor... 4/4 indestructible.
Yeah, it becomes a 4-4, and then it becomes a 5-4 when Sorin triggers and it can actually kill things.
Okay, you said 4-5 and
requires Sorin,
and I'm like, wait, what are we...
No, you're correct. I was crossing things. Essentially, the job of Sorin is to make it so that things can kill rhinos. It lets your rhinos kill their rhinos and survive. It lets your fleece mane kill their rhinos and survive because it's, you know, indestructible.
That's a terrible job to have.
Yeah. With all the life gain, though, it also means that the mirror matches take forever. So expect a lot of that at game day this weekend if people look at the top decks and just copy-paste them.
So let's see. The other Abzan deck is Abzan Aggro, and I can't scroll faster. Here it is. Mike Sigrus was playing it. Oh. And he's got three Sorins, Fleece Mane Lion, Rakshasa Death Dealer, which is just brutal, Heir of the Wilds, which I never thought I would see in a Pro Tour Top 8 deck, Anafenza, Herald of Torment, and Siege Rhino. So, whew, and then he's running Thoughtseize, one Ulcerate, three Abzan Charm, and four Heroes Downfall. So, this guy's running three Anafenza.
Yeah.
Ooh. And one less land. With 24.
Yeah.
No, wait, Ari was only running 24. Tiago was running 25. Oh. So yeah, this deck is... like, it's different enough to be called Abzan Aggro because the Death Dealer and the Herald of Torment really speed up the clock.
Yeah, and when it goes up against the matches where it has to play slower, the Ajani Mentor of Heroes comes in because he's got the ability to essentially dig through some cards for one of his plus abilities, and the ability to distribute those plus one counters also means that he can make things that can kill Siege Rhinos, which, again, was incredibly relevant.
Yes. So those are the Abzan decks in the top eight. What else is in the top eight? Let's skip those. There's another one. Nope, skip that one. Nope, skip that one. Oh, here we go. Ivan Flock was playing a blue-black control deck.
Yep, the lone control deck in the top eight.
With a creature base of four Prognostic Sphinx. I'm going to sneeze.
Prognostic Sphinx, of course, being one of the hardest things to deal with since you can give it hexproof. And the Scry 3 is good for, you know, digging in general.
And the discard a card to give it hexproof actually helps fuel your delve.
Yes.
Which is actually somewhat important because of Dig Through Time.
Yeah, if you need to, you can literally discard cards as if they were rituals almost, which is kind of neat.
So he's running the four Prognostic Sphinx, four Despise, and two Thoughtseize.
Which is weird, but life, it matters.
Well, I think this deck can handle the rest, though.
Yeah.
Two Drown in Sorrow, because control deck, so main board, you know. And then the instants are a set each of Dig Through Time, Dissolve, Disdainful Stroke, Heroes Downfall, three Bile Blight, and two Silence the Believers. Yeah, you remember that card? Yeah, you do.
Yeah, I do indeed. And it's actually really good still.
A whopping 27 lands because control deck.
Yeah, and because you can chuck the extra lands if you need to for the Sphinx, so they're not as dead as they normally would be. One thing to note as a recurring theme throughout the weekend is Disdainful Stroke, as it can only counter things with converted mana cost 4 or greater, exists largely to deal with planeswalkers and the control matchups against people deciding they're going to go Dig Through Time. But also, it's one of the only ways you're going to deal with that rhino. So
yeah, the rhino costs 4. So,
and I want to say that I saw a few games on the feed where they would have multiple Disdainful Strokes in their hand as they are crushed by things that cost 3 or less, like goblins and mantis riders and everything in the Jeskai deck. So,
oh, that's sad.
It's a bit rough. That's when they have to swap in their negates. As this is the control deck, though, it is worth noting that in the sideboard, it has a Pearl Lake Ancient, which is a mythic that no one cared about until right now. That is the 7-mana Leviathan mythic, flash that can't be countered, has prowess for giggles, because it's a 6-7, and it can be returned to your hand by bouncing 3 lands. It was picked as the card that would matter in a control mirror match because you flash it in and then beat them with it, but apparently that card, because it wasn't worth much of anything before, has gone up like 3 times its original price now, so it's kind of neat.
Oh, so it's $1.50 now.
It's like $6 now, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, same.
It is now worth more than the booster pack you bought it in.
Yay.
Which is nice. But yeah,
so that's the control deck.
Yeah.
Now,
one thing you might also notice going on is that all of the decks we've mentioned so far, I think, have Urborg in them, which, you know, I mean, they're running black, but they're also doing it because it lets their fetches not hurt them anymore when they need mana.
Yeah, it also turns off a mana confluence, so it's not pinging you every turn if you don't need the colored mana.
Right.
Hmm.
There were just so many games where, like, someone would play an Urborg, and then the other person would play an Urborg just to have another land, and it's kind of nice that they can do that now.
Yeah.
But you are fixing your opponents when nearly every deck is running black.
Well, it's funny you say that, because we just ran out of decks playing black in the top 8.
Let's go check out this Jeskai.
Yeah, so the rest of the top 8 is Jeskai. Now, we've had 3 different Abzan decks, 2 different Abzan decks, and one that's been tweaked to 2 different ends.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the aggro version and then the 2 mid-range versions.
Yeah.
And we had the blue-black control deck. God, that just rolls off the tongue like it never wasn't a thing.
Yeah.
I think that blue-black control hasn't been a thing for quite some time. And yet, blue-black control, it just comes right out.
Yeah, the last time it was a thing, they called it fairies.
Ooh, I'm pretty sure it's been a thing once since then.
Yeah, right? It has.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
So Sean
They're
McLaren,
not calling it Dimir control.
No, for some reason. So Sean McLaren, who came in second, was playing it's called Jeskai Winds. For reasons that are pretty obvious, actually.
For those of you who remember Red Deck Wins and Boros Deck Wins, we've added another color.
Yeah, because why
Inflation.
Not?
I'm looking forward to Wooburg Deck Wins.
That'll
We're
be awesome.
There.
So his creature base is 4 Goblin Rabble Masters. Rabble, rabble,
rabble. Rabble, rabble, rabble.
4 Mantis Riders, because they're ridiculous.
Yeah.
1 Seeker of the Way, as we discussed, week before last? Because I wasn't here last week, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. As we discussed week before last, because it's awesome.
It's probably the best prowess creature. So.
And that's his creature base. 9 dudes. 2 Sarkhan, the Dragon Speaker.
Virtual creature base.
Well, more of a virtual burn spell, I think.
Yeah.
5 mana, hit you for 4. Ba ba ba. 2 Anger of the Gods, because board clear. And then all of this nonsense. So he's got 4 Dig Through Time, because, well, you'll find out why in a minute. 4 Stoke to Flames, you know, 4 damage to something. 4 damage? 4 damage, yeah.
Yeah.
4 Jeskai Charm, which I do this with charms because I haven't learned them all myself yet. So this is the put a creature on top of its owner's library, deal 4 to an opponent, or your dudes get +1/+1 in lifelink.
Yep.
2 Magma Jets. Yay, Magma Jet. And did I say 2? I meant 4.
Yep, 4 Magma Jets.
And 4 Lightning Strikes. And
so,
he's also running 2 Banishing Light to deal with things that he can't burn out.
So if you were paying attention, between the 4 Stoke the Flames, 4 Jeskai Charms, 4 Magma Jets, 4 Lightning Strikes, and the 4 Dig Through Time to Dig, it was pretty reasonable for him to hope to get a burn spell at the end of the game.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he'd used a lot, but I mean, honestly, literally a third of his deck was burn or get to burn. So, and yeah, the Banishing Light is for solving those things that he can't burn, namely those annoying rhinos.
Yeah, pretty much. So that's one version of Jeskai Winds.
Mm-hmm.
That was the second place version, so that's a pretty good one.
Yeah.
The sideboard has 2 more Anger of the Gods, 3 Dissolves, a Phyrexian Revoker, 2 End Hostilities, a Disdainful Stroke, 2 Erase, 2 Negate, and 2 Keranos, God of Storms, because if you're playing blue and red, apparently you have to have Keranos in the board.
It's not a bad choice.
It's pretty awesome.
A worst case scenario, free lightning bolt. Best case scenario, draw a card. Or the other way around.
Yeah,
they're both pretty good.
Depends on what's going on at the moment.
Whatever's going on, you're not going to be that disappointed. Because in his deck, it's free lightning bolt or draw a lightning bolt. So, pretty nice.
So that's one Jeskai Winds. Let's scroll down. Here's another one. Holy crap. This is different again. This is Andre Stratsky.
Yeah.
Okay, so his burn base is just the burn. It's Stoke the Flames, Jeskai Charm, Magma Jet, Lightning Strike. Just
got boom, no time for digging.
Boom, 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 boom. And the reason he's got no time for digging, he's got 3 Banishing Lights, so we went up 1 there. But the reason he's got no time for digging is because he's got a lot more creatures.
Yes.
He's got a set of Seeker of the Way, a set of Mantis Riders, a set of Hushwing Griff. And if you're like, what? That's what I said. Hushwing Griff, 2-1. For 2 and a white, flash flying, creatures entering the battlefield don't cause abilities to trigger. What's the big thing we keep talking about that causes abilities to trigger?
Let's go with the rhino.
Hey!
You know what else? The rhino is not blocking this.
Yeah, that's also important. So let's see. He's got three Ash Cloud Phoenix, which makes me so happy to see in the top eight because this thing is amazing.
Whoosh.
And then two Storm Breath Dragon because Storm Breath Dragon, duh.
Because protection from almost everything.
Pretty much.
Protection
yeah.
from every relevant charm. Protection from, you know, all these enchantments that are getting rid of creatures. Protection from Elspeth, kind of, not really. I don't know.
Protection from Elspeth dudes?
Yeah, well.
If that matters.
Flying, and mostly it's an attack target Elspeth. Oh, look, she's almost dead.
Yeah, there's that.
Plus, so, you know, haste.
So, yeah, that's again, there's the more burn-oriented, burn and dig-oriented Jeskai Winds deck, and there's the more burn and creature-oriented Jeskai Winds deck.
Yeah.
Then, here's another one that's... Wait, he's not playing, he's not playing any Planeswalkers.
Which one are you looking at?
Andre.
Oh, Andre's, yeah, he's not.
How about that?
So he doesn't have time for any of this stuff. He's going to kill you as fast as possible.
Yeah, he's dudes in fire, dudes in fire. And then Yuya Watanabe is playing yet another version of Jeskai Winds. This one has three Sarkon. His creatures are a set of Seeker of the Way, a set of Rabblemaster, a set of Mantis Rider, and three Kings of the Kitties, Brimaz.
Yeah.
Shoo. And then his burn is the same as Andre's Stoke, Jeskai Charm, Magma Jet, Lightning Strike, and he's got two Gods Willing because he's got dudes, so keep him alive.
Because it cost one mana?
And because it can get you to punch through for the win, I guess. There's any number of reasons to play it.
Yeah, I mean, like, it does a lot of stuff, honestly.
Yeah.
Protection is always relevant.
So, yeah. He does have Chandra Pyromaster, which I'm surprised weren't in any of these other decks, and an Elspeth in his board.
Yeah.
So, again, this deck is... It's one deck, but there's three very distinct versions in the top eight. Well, maybe not three distinct versions.
Three different ways of getting where you need to go.
Well, it is the same deck. So yeah, there's three distinct versions of the same deck, as opposed to the Abzan thing earlier, which I would call two versions of one deck and then one other deck.
Yeah, they were all tuned for what they thought the meta was going to be.
Yeah.
Before we wander away from these, I would like to point out one of the neater interactions that you're seeing with all these decks that are running Rabblemaster is that the Rabblemaster and the Stoke the Flames actually does something pretty neat with Convoke, because you can tap the Rabblemaster and the Goblin token to pay the Convoke for just two mana, and, you know, it covers, you know, your red and all of that. But it also means that your Goblin token is not suiciding itself into something, which can be very relevant the next turn.
Yes.
So you get your four mana burn spell for two mana, and you probably killed something important, like an enemy Mantis Rider or something. And then the next turn you have another guy out, which means that if you have your next Stoke the Flames, it's even cheaper. But if you also have anything that, you know, is relevant to their size, like say a Jeskai Charm, making it bigger and giving it lifelink so it can actually survive an attack, then that much better. It's just a nice interaction to be aware of if you decide you want to play the deck this weekend. Kitty King does the same thing.
Yeah. Well, not exactly.
Well, I mean, Kitty King leaves around some tokens. Oh, okay. So you
I would say
still...
Kitty King's dudes show up tapped or show up blocking, so... So then, if you're keeping track, that's only seven decks in this top eight.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose this is a good thing, actually. Li Shiqian is playing the Jeskai Ascendancy deck.
Yes.
So this one, which, when it showed up that first week in Standard, I really didn't think that it could work in Standard. Like, there's already talk of banning it in Modern, which... I'm okay with.
Yeah, the Modern banning is completely justified if they do it. That thing wins way too reliably on turn three, and quite possibly on turn two, and that gets banned in Modern, so.
Yeah, but in Standard, I really thought that it was just first week nonsense, but it turns out, it actually works.
Yeah.
So, Jeskai Ascendancy, again, when you cast a non-creature spell, creatures you control get +1/+1 until end of turn. untap those creatures, and whenever you cast a non-creature spell, you can draw a card. If you do, discard a card, so you get an optional loot. And, yeah, with enough untapping and nonsense, you can actually make this kill people directly in the face. So
I think part of the way that it got to there to the end of the day is if you look at the sideboard, it can transition into beat your face in.
Holy God. Okay, we're not there yet.
Yeah.
So, well, how does this work, you say? Well, the creature base is three Kiora's followers. That's the guy tap to untap another permanent. Rattleclaw Mystic taps for mana. Sylvan Caryatid taps for mana.
And essentially, all three of these tap for mana, even if it's by way of the Kiora's follower untapping a land or another tap dude.
Yeah, or another creature. So that's that. It's also got Nissa, who, you know, untaps four lands. That might be important. Four forests, rather.
Yeah, she's not untapping four of them in this deck.
Yeah, she's making dudes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, what happens? Well, you cast all these spells, and you... Come on, pop up. Pop up, you jerk. Oh my God. Bill, what does Commune with the Gods do? It won't pop up, and I don't remember.
Oh, Commune with the Gods?
Yeah.
Oh, Commune with the Gods is the one in a green sorcery that lets you reveal the top five cards of your library, and then you can put a creature or enchantment from them into your hand, and the rest goes to the graveyard. Note that they're going to the graveyard. It matters for some other spells.
That's important. Okay. So they're casting things like Commune with the Gods, Tormenting Voice, which for one and a red and discard a card, you draw two cards.
Yep, you're essentially swapping out two cards in your hand for something else, but more importantly, you're casting a sorcery.
Yeah, which, hey, that's a non-creature. Mm-hmm. There's Twin Flame, which
is hilarious.
You get a copy of a dude that you have on the battlefield, and it has haste, and it has strive, so if you really want to, you can copy multiple dudes.
Mm-hmm.
Retraction Helix, which says, until end of turn, target creature gains tap, bounce an on-land permanent. That's funny.
And relevant.
And then Dig Through Time, because
you just dumped a bunch of cards in your graveyard.
Yeah, so Dig Through Time, we haven't actually said it yet, but I'm sure everyone knows at this point. It's 6 blue-blue, rare instant with Delve. You look at the top 7, that's a lot, cards of your library. Put 2 in your hand and the rest in the bottom of your library in any order. So you're digging through time, literally. You're digging
as literally as you could, yeah.
Yeah, 7 turns into the future to try to find something to save your ass, or to keep you going, which in this deck is a thing.
You're running out of note of what you need, and then your future self sends it back in time to you.
Pretty much, yeah. And then there's 2 Briber's Purse, because you can cast that for 0, or you can cast it for non-0, and it becomes relevant.
You're pretty much going to cast it for 0, possibly dozens of times, because you can then keep bouncing it.
Exactly. And then Dragon Mantle, which, I guess because it draws a card. Yeah.
It's a single red enchantment that it gives your creature fire breathing. No one cares. It draws a card when you cast it, so it replaces itself. You will not run out of cards immediately. If you can cast the Dragon Mantle, you get a card back.
And so it's doing all of this, and you're just cycling. So every time you cast a Commune of the Gods or a Tormenting Voice, your dudes get bigger, and you get an untap trigger, so you can tap them for mana. Hey, how about that? And then, after you tap them for mana, they untap, and now they're bigger, and you've got mana.
Yeah.
So, really, once you get the Ascendancy and a couple of dudes out, you just do that.
Yep, you just keep doing it, and you try really hard not to brick, which you're very unlikely to do, because the Ascendancy is also letting you loot every time.
Yeah.
So, it does one thing really, really well, and yeah, you get through all that, and likewise, you don't even need more cards once you actually hit the Retraction Helix and a Briber's Purse, because you'll just keep bouncing it and playing it for 0 over and over again until your guys are arbitrarily large, and then you kill them.
Yeah.
And it seems like something that you could interact with, but honestly,
and they're
it's really hard.
The really cool thing is, Briber's Purse, you don't have to play it for 0.
Yeah.
If they've got blockers out, you can cast it, and you're producing enough mana, which surely you are, you can cast it, remove a counter that dude can't block, put it back in your hand.
Yeah, because like, you can cast it if you've got the mana open, which you will. You can just set it so that no one can block, and then bounce it and keep doing your pumping thing.
It's
pretty nuts.
That is
And you don't actually need more than 2 of them with the amount of cards you're going to draw in the stack.
So yeah, and then if they feel that their matchup after game one of the blah and kill isn't good in the sideboard, this is so funny. The sideboard has 3 Arc Lightning and 3 Lightning Strike. Okay.
That takes care of problems.
Yeah, 3 Swan Song. That takes care of problems.
Because you don't care.
Exactly.
You really don't care about them getting a bird.
But then it's also got 2 Polukranos. Polukrana. Do we ever figure out the proper way to pronounce that?
I think it's Polukranos.
Okay, we'll go with that. And 4 Savage Knuckle Blades.
Yeah.
And that thing is a beast. Actually, it's an Ogre Warrior, but it's a beast.
It's a 4/4 Ogre Warrior who's probably got haste, and it might be a 6/6.
Yeah, and it's virtually impossible to freaking kill.
And in this deck, it's really neat because you can board all the a lot of the combo pieces out, board in all these other cards, and you can even still leave your Ascendancy in there because it's still really good with creatures. So I think that's how the deck works. And the way that you sideboard this one is you take all 15 cards and you put them in, and then you shuffle, and then you go through and you take out 15 cards. And your opponent doesn't know whether or not you boarded out the combo. And they just have to play not knowing.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
So that's... The top 8 is not as diverse as I would have liked. Like, at first glance, it's 3 Abzan, 3 Jeskai, a control, and a combo.
Yeah.
But really, it's... Like I said, it's 2 different Abzan and a Jeskai with various tunings and a control and a combo. So...
Yeah, and there... Mind you, this is just the top 8. There are tons and tons of decks that are great floating throughout this, and because this is a combo event, like all of them are, someone could have a completely undefeated standard deck and just not make the top 8 off of draft. So, by all means, go digging. They've posted a lot of the deck lists. They might have posted all the deck lists by now. Go digging. You might find something cool that no one's aware of for states.
So there were 356 in the final standings. I don't know. I don't think DQs show up in the standings, do they?
I have no idea.
There were 2 DQs, so there were as many as 358, maybe.
Yeah.
At this Pro Tour. Which feels like a lot for a Pro Tour, but maybe not.
I don't know. I mean, it's pretty cool, but I like how, like I was saying before, essentially every standard deck that made 21 points, or essentially won 7 matches over the course of the event in the Constructed, has been posted to the Wizards site. I've just confirmed that. So if you would like more variety than what we talked about, go digging. There's a lot of stuff there.
Yeah, I'm actually trying to find it. So would you put a link to that in the show notes?
Yeah, they actually split it over 2 pages. So I will drop them.
Of course they do.
There's A through N, and then there's O through Z.
What are you, Canadian? Oh, there they are. Top standard decks. Hey, look at that. It was at the top. Of course it was at the top. I started at the bottom.
Yeah.
Had I started at the top, it would have been at the bottom.
Very likely. Admittedly, O through Z comes before A through N, so.
That's weird. Did you say A through Z?
Yeah, I changed my mind.
Fair enough.
But yeah, tons of decks.
Ah, oh lord, did I just close it? No, I'm just stupid. Okay. So, there were also a pair of disqualifications that caused some kerfuffle over the weekend. Kerfuffle. Yes.
One right at the very beginning.
Well, I don't know about the very beginning. It was in limited deck registration. Was that the first thing?
I think it started limited. I think they did limited before they did standard.
Oh, well. So this is a DQ in limited deck registration. Registration. They weren't even playing yet.
You don't even have your deck yet, necessarily. You don't
even have a reason to be pissed. But this guy, Greg, I don't know how you pronounce his name. O-Green C. O... the word green and then a C.
I don't know.
So that guy.
You know, the one that wouldn't have got DQ'd.
Yeah, during registration. And it said he threw cards into the face of the player sitting opposite him. It wasn't an opponent. It was a guy sitting there.
Yeah.
And after interviewing him and multiple witnesses, they disqualified him because you can't, it says here, 0 tolerance for any physical aggression directed at other players.
Yep.
And apparently, he went out on Twitter and was, or Facebook or both or whatever, and was like, man, I didn't even know what happened. But when the judges talk to you, the guy you did it to, and other people sitting around, and they disqualify you from a Pro Tour, and then you get on social media going, man, That ain't even what happened. I just, like, slid it over to him. Then his face? Like, then you look like a liar and a jackass.
Yeah.
So.
I assure you, Wizards doesn't want to disqualify anyone at a high-profile event, because it makes news like this.
Yeah, because
they don't do it just willy-nilly.
Yeah, when they do that, they have to put something like this up, because otherwise people will bug them to death. Hey, why'd you disqualify such as a pro tour? So they have to put up this thing on the site. But, yeah. Here's a hint, okay? When you get disqualified from something that's, and there's going to be an investigation later, maybe you should not go on social media and post the exact opposite of what they came up with, because that makes you look bad. And at something like this, there's going to be an investigation. And if you listen to JudgeCast episode 95, where they talk about what happens after a DQ, they look at stuff like this to determine, you know, intent and amount of remorse and all that. And if the story that you tell them in period A and the story that you tell them afterward, or you tell on social media afterwards, don't drive, they frown on that.
Yeah. Turns out.
Yeah. Turns out they follow up on stuff like this.
They also have the internet.
I really hope it's episode 95. Prilliman told me I need to listen to it.
I mean, I've heard the episode. I don't remember the number, but go check it out. It's actually interesting, even if you aren't a judge, because...
Well, it's not secret information.
Yeah.
But it's not public information. So it's not written down somewhere where you could just walk up and look at it. But if you ask, they'll tell you, you know.
Yeah.
So this episode of JudgeCast is actually really good for that. So go listen to it. But, so that was one of the big DQs.
Yeah.
So good on you, Greg, for giving us something to talk about. And the other one in round 7, competitor Lee Jung-won was disqualified from the tournament. And
yep.
The deal was he activated a fetch land, a Wooded Foothills.
Yes.
In response, his opponent just got charmed his one creature on top of his library. Okay.
So for those of you paying attention, the effect here is yeah. It's like you're going to have to go find, like, even if you don't find, or even if you, you know, like, it's like go look for a mountain or forest, then shuffle your library. It's not if you go look for a mountain or forest, you shuffle your library. You're doing that either way. So you got to shuffle it.
So, but after the Jeskai Charm, he tried to skip, you know, doing the fetch so that he could redraw his dude. And judges talked to him and were like, dude, no. And he got disqualified because they determined it was an intentional. It was intentional. So, hey, dummy.
That said, for those of you paying attention, Jeskai Charm in response to a fetch land is really good.
It's freaking brilliant and hilarious.
It's great.
Unless it happens to you.
Well, then it's terrible and it's awful and you should feel bad. But in the meanwhile, that's just another great use for Jeskai Charm. And this didn't come up before when we had the Azurius Charm, because that only affected things during combat. So here you can just do that whenever.
Yeah, if you were like, attack, crack this fetch. Like, what?
I mean, I guess you could.
Response, Azurius Charm, comma, idiot. So, of course, there weren't fetches then, so still.
Yeah.
But you get my point.
Right. Yeah, so in the case of this one, that's specifically, it's an instance of knowingly not following the rules in order to gain an advantage, which is frowned upon. So that is how you have that story of when you went to Hawaii and screwed up. So don't do that.
Yeah. I also heard some rumors of our old buddy Burton Cheney rearing his ugly head, but
I haven't heard anything about that.
I can't find any, credible things on Twitter about it. I can find random, you know, randos talking about it, but
we try to be one step over MTG Salvation forums here.
It will. So. Half a step. Wait a minute. I remember Kibler said something about it. Oh, it'd be under tweets and replies, wouldn't it? Idiot. Scroll.
Good old Twitter.
Nope, that's not it. Back. Okay, so maybe I won't be able to find it, but...
I mean, presumably if something happened, we'd have a press thing on it, wouldn't we?
Well, nothing happened. It's just...
Oh.
Something happened.
Right.
Yeah, I can't find it though. So maybe it wasn't Kibler. It's possible that I have. Oh, here it is.
Just for a second there, we had hope.
Yeah. Oh no, I don't actually know who this one was talking about. It was one of those passive aggressive, a certain player. Da 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 da. But
local man was cited stealing peanut butter. Yeah.
But I think I figured out that it was. So what happened was that. Here we go. LSV said something. Bam. So LSV goes, I got mad and berated him about trying to cheat. The should be Polcheon, yeah. Which is pretty uncharacteristic of me. And yes, LSV tearing into someone is not something that usually happens.
That is atypical, yeah.
But from what I heard was that, I can't tell from this Twitter conversation that it was Bertoncini, but I think it is. So the version I heard was that there was a Jeskai ascendancy on the board, on Cheon's board. He cast a non-creature spell. Bertoncini negated it. And, okay, so that countered it. And then he tried to resolve his triggers. And Bertoncini was like, no, you already missed those because negate.
And
that's not how that works.
No.
What now? It does work if you talk your opponent into it and they go, well, I missed it. Well, then yeah, they missed it. But if you're paying attention, like if you're at a pro tour, then and you're Polcheon, for God's sake, then yeah, maybe.
Because, yeah, like, the order of operations on that is, you cast your spell. Technically, you would say, you know, this trigger is on the stack, but it doesn't do anything visibly until it resolves. So if your opponent negates it, then so what? It can still be on the stack. That's not a problem. And then you go, oh, and then this happened. And it's like, yeah, because there's nothing visible to show that you've missed any trigger. You're not putting counters on them. You do some untapping, but that's again when it resolves, and it hasn't resolved yet if you're negating it. So
yeah.
Good luck with that one. Now, if I'm wrong, someone tell me, because that's my assumption of how it works based on every other rules interaction I've seen. But
I've spoken to a level 3 and a rules advisor, and they were both like, yeah, that's not how that works. So
okay, good. Yeah. So yeah, don't try that either. You'll just look like a jerk, and if you get away with it, we will hate you.
Yeah.
And you don't want us to hate you. We're friendly people.
Yeah, I mean, I like you.
Yeah.
Mostly. Except for that one guy.
To your face.
Screw that guy.
Well, nobody likes that guy.
So yeah, he ended up in 285th. So, you know, bully for Bertoncini. But, like, one, I hate to talk bad. I've tried real hard not to crack any Bertoncini jokes since he came back from his ban. Because that was the purpose of the ban. He's done being banned now. Like, I'm sure I slipped up, and people are gonna be like, oh, an episode, whatever, you called it. No, I'm trying, alright? I'm not perfect. And sometimes, they just roll off the tongue so easy. But, I've tried real hard, cause he did his time, he's back now, let's give him the benefit of the doubt. But then, you know, it's something that's gonna be working against you for the rest of forever.
Well, it's one of those things, you're allowed to play Magic again. That is what that means.
Yeah.
You have done something, and you were in trouble for it, and you were punished, and now the punishment is over, but that doesn't mean your reputation goes away. You have to earn that back, and it's really hard to earn that back.
Yeah, and that's part of the reason I've tried real hard not to, you know, talk smack. But then stuff like this happens, and you start to question, like, and to be honest, this should be a conversation that we're having off the air. But probably. Screw it, I'm not going to do this much editing, so it's out there now. So, but you'd think that knowing that you got banned for this and that your reputation is trashed forever, that you would do better. You know, try not to do stuff like this.
Yeah.
Now, there was nothing illegal about what he did. This again is the RLX thing. Was he being a dick or was he being excited? Well, in RLX's case, he was being excited. In this case, was he being a dick or was he trying? Was he angle shooting and trying to get an edge, or was he clarifying?
I think a lot of what's going on is that if this were at a pre-release or even a local PTQ, it would be completely understandable if people did not understand the interaction. When you're on the pro tour and the pro level, it's assumed that, you know, you aren't necessarily a judge, but that you know how these kind of things are going to work, especially when you know going into the weekend that the Jeskai ascendancy is going to be there. So even if you don't mean it, it's not unreasonable for someone to assume you're angle shooting when you do things like that. And also, especially with your history.
And also for one of the most happy and easygoing people in Magic, Luis Scott Vargas, to, in his own words, berate someone about this, that's bad.
Yeah.
Because Luis doesn't do that.
Right.
So, you know. But anyway, enough of that. On to happier news.
Enough of that nonsense. We've got more going on here.
So, that's everything that's the Pro Tour. Oh, wait, no. The same guy, Nick Vigabool, who did the... I hope that's how you pronounce his name. It's the greatest name. Vigabool. He sounds like he should be... what's a good accent to say? He sounds like he should be a Russian.
Maybe.
Vigabool. It's a great accent to have that name. But anyway, who did the... It's not exactly an infographic, but it's pretty much an infographic about the first week of Standard, the new Standard. You remember that?
Yeah.
Well, he did one for the decks that earned 18 or more points in the Standard portion of the Pro Tour.
And so I believe it.
It's top decks, which the top two are Jessica Wins and Abzan Midrange. Imagine that.
Between them, they make up nearly 50% of the field.
No.
Oh, no, they're more than it.
Yeah, it's over 50.
They're making up 56% of the field.
Yeah.
Math.
So those are going to be the boogeymen for a while, I'm afraid.
I hope you like red and white cards.
Although in three colors, though, that's lots of room for...
Yeah.
Fidgeting, which as we saw with just the top eight.
Well, what it says is that white is a good color right now.
Yeah. The next section is color selection, with white being a whopping 79%.
Yep.
And then I like this third section here is number of deck colors. Two color decks were 25%. Three color decks were 75%. Which trips me out because the Jeskai Ascendancy combo is four colors. But I guess it was less than a percent, maybe? Let's go back up here. Ascendancy combo was 4% of the, was 4% of the total. So.
Yeah. I think that might have actually been an oversight here.
Yeah. He saw Jeskai.
He probably saw Jeskai and just assumed three colors.
Yeah. So let's see. Moving on. Top cards. Again, standard decks got, they got 18 or more points. Big surprise. Courser of Krufix is number one. Number two, however, is Seeker of the Way.
So great.
Which is so great. And then the Caryatid, and then the Rabble Master, and then we get into new stuff with Mantis Rider and then Siege Rhino. Where's the next new thing? Wingmate Rock, 19% of main board in all the decks that got 18 points or better.
Yeah.
Phoenix. Ashcloud Phoenix in 13%. Anafenza in 10%. Rattleclaw Mystic in 8%. Heir of the Wilds in 6%. That's so weird. And the Death Dealer in 6%. And then sideboard, Narset is in a whopping 10% of sideboards.
Oh, nice.
And then Karanos is in 10%, and then Brimoz is in 10% of sideboards.
Yep.
There is some craziness going on here. Then he's got removal. I'm still a little iffy on how that's guy's removal, but.
Yeah, I was about for removal. I mean, it is, but.
Oh, there you are. What did you say? You blinked out.
Oh, yeah. So, like, I'm right there with you. So, like, the first one's obviously Lightning Strike, because. It kills a Mantis Rider, and you can play it with a Mantis Rider, and Mantis Rider, Mantis Rider, Mantis Rider, and look at all that Jeskai. And in second, though, you have Sarkhan, the Dragon Speaker, who speaks the language of dragons, which is apparently murder.
Which, admittedly, his second ability is removal.
Yeah, it is, totally.
But, okay, whatever. I mean, he's also got Elspeth listed here, and technically her, oh crap, second ability is removal?
Yeah, it's a partial board wipe.
Yeah. But he's also got Sorin, which his limit break is technically removal, but come on, man.
So the thing about Sorin's limit break to understand is that if you manage to actually get his emblem against a control deck, they can't win. They actually can't. Because they only ever have one creature.
That's true.
So they just lose.
Hmm.
That's probably why it's noteworthy here. But.
And then he's got removal inside, which, big surprise again, Drown in Sorrow is number one in removal spell and sideboards, and End Hostilities is second. Okay, that doesn't... Yeah, that's fine.
Yep.
And then other cards, which... Okay, yeah, I see. I was like, these are all lands. Nope, there's Dig Through Time and there's Thoughtseize. Okay.
Yeah.
But Urborg is in 44% of all decks in main board.
I mean, even if you weren't running black, it's still something that helps you out with your cards that hurt you when they give you mana directly or indirectly.
Yeah.
So,
but if you scroll past lands, you see Dig Through Time in 38% of main board, which Dig Through Time was a big thing this week.
Essentially, if you weren't running Abzan, you were running Dig Through Time.
for the most part. Yeah. Like the, what did it do? It like, its price went like 7x overnight.
Oh, so, at the start of the weekend, Dig Through Time was something like $3 or $4. It was something really low. And then at the height of like Friday night, Saturday-ish, when people saw the new standard decks and everyone just had that biting of like, wait, is this the second coming of Sphinx's Revelation? It went nuts and it spiked up to like $19 or something. It was like $17 to $20 depending on the site you were looking at. So this card went up like, you know, 4 to 5 fold depending on which site you were looking at. And then it backed off a little bit by the end of the weekend as the blue decks were slowly dropping back. But it's still at a pretty healthy spot right now. I think it was like $14 last I checked. By the time you listen to this, the prices will probably be settled a bit more from the current shakeup.
Hopefully.
But yeah, its price went up a lot.
Which, and, for reasons I'm not sure of, I find hilarious.
Well, I'm always entertained to watch the prices spike at the beginning of a tournament and then go back down a bit by the end of it. Yeah. That's just funny.
Let's see. Other cards in the sideboard. Disdainful Stroke is at first, because that makes perfect sense.
Yep.
And then Negate, Thoughtseize. Yep. But then he goes even further and says, okay, let's look at the Khans of Tarkir cards that are, like, just new stuff that are in decks that got 18 or more points. And what I find hilarious is the first card is actually not a fetch. It's Sarkhan.
Yep, Dragon Man.
And then a fetch, Windswept Teeth, and then a Disdainful Stroke, and then another fetch. And then it goes into things we've talked about. Disdainful Stroke, another fetch, Dig Through Time, Seeker of the Way. So yeah, this is all very fascinating to look at to see how it is that the new standard is shaking out after the Pro Tour. I wonder how many of these decks were just, okay, here's what people will probably be playing, so let's build something to beat that.
Most of the decks that I saw that actually did well were designed so that they could overcome the inevitable board stalls with Courser of Kruphex and the Mana Dorks and Polukranos, because all the talk going into this was...
I think I lost...
Seadrino's come in.
Oh, there he is.
Oh, I'm back. Okay.
So all the talk going into this was what?
All the talk going into this was how are you going to overcome or combat or play the green deck? With the idea being that they've got their 12 mana dorks or their 8 mana dorks with their Courser essentially being a mana dork with all the lands and stuff it's getting you.
Yeah.
Pumping out a Polukranos, how do you deal with that? And the answer to that was Seadrino, because it's a 4-5. And so it's going to kill these things when it attacks and it's going to drain some life. And a lot of this was just playing around, how do we deal with that? And that's where all the Mantis Riders come in, because they just fly over it, don't care. And all of the Seadrinos for killing it, and even a lot of the Planeswalkers are there so that you can recover from that nonsense if it has to happen. So it'll be interesting to see how much of this sticks around for next week and onward, when people aren't all meta-building around exactly that interaction. Because it's still very powerful. It's still going
to
be there.
Yeah. Now, if you go back up to color selection, you'll see that green has the lowest selection, but this is of decks that did really well. This is not of all the decks. So I really want to know what the full metagame looked like, as opposed to just the top end of the metagame. Because the top end of the metagame doesn't matter until later rounds, where you have to slog through all the crap.
Yeah, the time-honored adage of Magic is that there's the deck everyone's going to be playing, and then there's the deck that can beat the deck that you know everyone's going to be playing. And you want to be the deck that can beat the deck that can beat the other one, but somehow still get there. You want to be the person who gets to the top eight with a deck that's good against the rest of the top eight, because they're all good against a deck that's not in the top eight. And in the case of this one, it's going to be one of those things of like all the decks that you saw in the top eight could deal with the green decks. So we'll see going ahead if the green decks bounce back, or if they just become the Abzan decks, because it ran a lot of those cards too.
Yeah.
But who knows?
So that's a big deal.
Right now, they're probably all going to try to beat Seadrinos. Expect those birds that turn off Seadrinos' ability to show up.
Yeah, that would not surprise me at all. But, like, a disturbing thing I heard was, what's the most popular Legacy deck? And you can rattle off, well, this kind of Delver and that kind of Delver. But whoever told me this was like, no, it's Legacy Burn, because it's one of the cheapest and easiest to, you know, less brain intensive to play. And that's what you see in the first, you know, 3-4 rounds of a Legacy Open, is just burn everywhere.
Yeah.
But, you know, you will see one in the top eight every third week, if we're lucky. Right. So it's not one of the winningest decks, but everyone's freaking playing it because why not? It's Legacy. It's probably the cheapest deck you can build.
It probably also has a lot less care about what your opponent's running. So if you're not going to do heavy meta investment, it's just like, I'm going to burn your face and that's my plan.
Yeah. And that tripped, like that's something I don't think about because I don't play, you know, in competitive events, but I don't think about what I see at the top tables is not what you actually play against.
Right.
So that opened my eyes. I was like, holy crap.
That's also why it's a different world for the people that come into these events with buys. Like, if you go to a Grand Prix with three buys, you don't have to worry about all that stuff at the bottom, and you build your deck to beat the decks that can get past that, and you just have this massive advantage because you didn't have to deal with all that stuff.
Yeah, so you don't pick up an accidental loss against some dirtle playing this nonsense deck that shouldn't win anything, but can't, your deck absolutely can't beat it.
Yeah, and then they beat you that one early game, and then you have their terrible record in your tiebreakers.
Exactly, yeah. So, yeah, the link to Nick's article here on Gathering Magic is in the show notes. Check that out. I mentioned Jason Ault's article on air, right? Was that before we started recording?
You did not mention that on air.
Okay, so going back to the Ari Lax thing, Jason Ault of Quiet Speculation wrote about that and how all of you people are like, hey, he sucks, or stupid. So the link to that's in the show notes too. It's actually much better than what I just said, but yeah, so go read that. He's got smatterings from Twitter and a link to the 10th round draft video. So yeah, okay. Let's close that.
Yeah.
So is that everything? Oh, what happened here? Oh, those are the two. Okay. So that's everything about, oh, there's also, Bill, you want to tell him about this link in the show notes that you added?
Oh, right. So yeah, I'm not going to tell you what's in this, but there's a video link in the show notes that is very representative of what the top eight, specifically the Abzan decks, were accomplishing, which we've just got listed here as the Pro Tour Cons of Tarkir top eight interpretive dance video. So I'll just let you go enjoy that.
Yeah, I recommend you watch this because this is what happened pretty much.
Pretty much exactly.
Like, it took me a full 30 seconds into the video and I was like, oh, ha, 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 damn it, Bill.
That's about right. Yeah. Do we want to do the Wizards list of top five cards just for clues?
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
All right. So, Top five cards.
We really need like a musical cue right here, but yeah, that would involve more editing, so that's not going to happen.
True. We'll just hold up a phone and the microphone and everyone gets all that reverb.
I'm so glad you picked up on that.
Yeah.
I can't find. Oh, there it is. Oh, this was at the bottom. You know why? Because I started at the top. Son of
you and your reading.
I can't read.
It's a skill, really. So yeah, the top five cards as chosen by Ray Walkinshaw and Mark Calderero. This is on the Wizards website. Tell me if you notice anything missing as we go down this list. So number five, there's Jeskai Ascendancy because really it's the basis of a deck that made the top eight. And it's a neat thing to have in your non-ascendancy decks too. But I mean, it's got a deck built around itself. So that's pretty cool.
And it's been a while since we had like an actual combo deck in Standard, hasn't it?
I can't remember easily the last time we had a combo deck in Standard.
Like, there's been janky stuff, but nothing that's just like, bah!
I mean, I don't remember the last time a combo deck in Standard was actually a thing. There have been plenty of combos that have popped up that are kind of neat, but this isn't a traditional, I play these cards in this order and then I win, and I don't care what you're doing, Standard combo deck. As opposed to, I found this cute way to make an infinitely big dude, which, typically, when you can do those, your entire deck has exactly that interaction, and it can be interfered with. So, this time around, though, nope. It's pretty great. And keep an eye on it, because it'll probably be banned in Modern. So that's Jeskai Ascendancy in number five. Number four is Trail of Mystery, and it actually surprised me to see that here.
Yeah, Ari Lax actually had this. So, he said, in the interview, that their backup plan for drafting was the, like, five-color morph deck.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he ended up getting both of the drafts, or two of the drafts. How many drafts did they do?
I don't know. I know that they did drafts on Friday and then drafts again on Saturday.
Okay, so two of the drafts that he did.
Yeah.
And Trail of Mystery is just sick in that deck.
Yeah, so for those of you who don't remember Trail of Mystery, which is understandable, it's the one in a green rare enchantment from the current set. Cons of Tarkir, obviously, and it's the one where when a creature enters the battlefield face down under your control, you can search your land for a basic or search your library for a basic land, reveal it, put it into your hand. And also, whenever a permanent you control turns face up, if it's a creature, it gets +2/+2 till end of turn. I've played against this thing in Limited, and it will wreck you so hard. Because even if they're not killing you on the morph guys turning face up, they're going to draw a lot of cards off of you. And they're going to be able to unmorph them because they have all the land. So.
Yeah, so this card actually makes the five-color morph deck, I don't want to say viable, because I think if you build it properly, it's already viable, but it makes it not just viable, but an archetype, like something that
it makes
you
it
can
consistent.
Draft. Yeah.
It's not like every game you hope you draw the right combination of colors to unmorph these things. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
If you get this early enough, you will just win.
Yeah.
And also, it's pretty devastating when you go into morph combat and you know that even if they flip like a dorky little one, the +2/+2 is so relevant that it'll probably still kill your guys. So you just don't block things.
Oh,
and
man.
Then you just take damage from it that way. It's
that's
great.
That stupid 3/1 that you can flip up by revealing a green card, the Teemer Charger.
Yeah.
That gives something trample. Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, when I was in the PTQ last week, I played a deck with it, and it was straight up the morph deck, like the 4 or 5 or whatever color morph deck. And the game, when he played Trail of Mystery, I lost hard. It wasn't even close. Like, I was on the back foot the entire game. He's got all these lands that I can't keep up with. I'm playing, like, one spell a turn, and he's, like, playing a morph creature face down and attacking, and then during my turn, unmorphing it if he feels like it. Just whatever. Like, I can't attack into it. It's a miserable experience. But I'm sure it's great playing it from the other side. And, of course, they're hitting all their colors, too, which, in this format, I think colors are the number one thing that kills you in Limited. So being able to not have to worry about that is pretty great.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's probably why it's actually here. I forget, because I was looking at this like it was a list of standard cards, and I'm like, nope, this is a combination of the constructed and the limited list.
Yeah,
so that
now,
makes more
to
sense.
Be fair, that's the only one that's not standard. So.
Yeah, and that's just why it stood out as odd to me. So that's number four. Number three is Mantis Rider, because Lightning Angel. Mantis Rider being the 3/3 Flying Vigilance Haste, being the I just bolted you on turn 3, and I'm going to keep bolting you till you're dead, the card.
Yeah, that's it.
It's pretty amazing, and in Limited, it's even more amazing. But in Constructed, it's the backbone of the Jeskai decks, and it does a very good job of getting through and destroying people.
Yeah,
it flies over the problems. It stays back to block those annoying Rabblemaster tokens your opponent has.
Yeah.
It just does all of it.
Yeah, when we first previewed this over on the Mana Pool, see, we're not competitive players, but we can smell a good card when we see it. And I saw this, and I went, it's Lightning Angel that costs one less. Sweet Jesus.
Yeah.
And look, I was right. Yay.
I like how you pay one extra mana for Lightning Angel, and all you get out of it's one more toughness.
Well, you know, creatures were not as good back.
Right.
When was
but,
it,
I mean,
anyway?
The
pop-up is for stupid, from the
yeah,
vault,
I
stupid, or whatever, or dual decks. Oh god, Apocalypse. Yeah, because it's enemy color, duh.
Yeah, the time I saw it was time shifted, so I didn't know where its original one was.
Yeah, no one cared when it was time shifted because, again, creatures got better.
Because creatures got better. But yeah, in the case of this one, it's just a ridiculously powerful card that is a good reason to play Jeskai colors.
Yeah. And yeah, Lightning Strike kills it, but you know what? Doesn't matter.
I mean, Lightning Strike can kill it, and that's, you know, a thing, but odds are, unless you had the Lightning Strike right then, you got lightning struck by it first.
Exactly.
So, especially if you're on the play and you're just like, turn 3, hit you.
It's just
like, there you go. You've been hit. It's also a great enabler if you've got the rocks in your deck, because it's probably going to get through combat. At this point, it's already done some damage to them, and now you've got 2 more flyers. I think you just won. So, it's pretty sweet.
All that he just said.
Yeah. So that's number 3. Number 2 is Dig Through Time, because Dig Through Time. Yeah. It is the premier blue draw card spell. It is taking up the mantle of the recently leaving Sphinx's Revelation, but it's not gaining a bunch of life outright, so the game can actually end, and we appreciate it.
Yeah, it's not drawing 5 cards and gaining 5 life. It's just getting you 2 cards, and you have to work to make this work.
Yeah, the rest of your deck is contributing.
That's why the fetches and the all the burn spells they were playing are relevant in ways other than mana fixing and burning. They're also feeding the Dig Through Time, and that's important, because the problem with the aggressive decks has always been they run out of gas and then they sit there in top deck mode.
Yeah.
So what does this do? Well, this gets you two cards, and chances are it costs you at most three mana.
Yeah, and it is
maybe four. Maybe
so you're not even like you're leaving the counter magic open, and then you're like, oh, okay, well, I guess I'm just gonna go get two awesome cards.
Exactly.
And you think they were in a bad spot before, but the ability to delve and get the cards and then likely cast one of them this turn is too crucial to overlook. And also, I really like the fact that because it's delve, they're not just gonna get another dig through time and do it again. So it gets rid of a lot of the annoying Sphinx's Revelation interactions. So I like
it. Hey, I didn't even think of that.
I really appreciate the fact that it puts them on the bottom of your library instead of your graveyard.
Yeah.
Because if it fed itself, that would get degenerated.
Oh yeah,
really
if it
fast.
Fed itself, it would just be completely wrong.
Yeah. So that's cool. And then they've got, of course, Siege Rhino for number one because
duh.
Siege Rhino currently owns the format. The unassuming 4/5 for four with trample and a relevant drain three life ability turns out to be really good, especially in multiples. They had this fun habit throughout the top eight of always showing up in groups of three. Yeah, like there's nothing specifically causing that. It just kept happening. You would see instances where they play the first one and then it lists their hand and they've got two more and it's just like, your opponent doesn't know it yet, but they're down nine life and also 4/5s with trample. It's just great.
Okay, let's see. Oh, okay, so I went to look up what the collective noun for rhinos is. Duh, it's Crash of Rhinos.
It is a Crash of Rhinos,
yeah. Yeah, I completely forgot about, you know, the card.
Yeah, my friend Jess actually tweeted at Marshall during the coverage saying, you should call it a Crash of Rhinos, it's appropriate. And Marshall replies after he's no longer actively doing commentary. So it's like, aw, you could have said that.
Lame.
But regardless, yes, a Crash of Rhinos is appropriate. And they're just great. And the best part is that when you have two of them, you can double block your opponent's Rhino and it's dead and you don't lose anything. So Siege Rhino is great. Now the card that I'm a little critical, like now that I'm thinking about it, yeah, this list makes more sense because Trail of Mystery had to be in for the limited part, but I would have liked to see Sorin Solemn Visitor on this list because he was everywhere in the top eight. He was enabling so much between his life gain, but mainly his play him, tick him down to make a vampire. And then even if they deal with him, you got a 2-2 flyer out of it. And this is a format where the 2-2 flyer for 4 doesn't seem great, but a 2-2 flyer for 4, which has target opponent discards a removal spell, pretty good. And
seems fine.
The ability to then tick up your Siege Rhinos to get through their Siege Rhinos is devastating, especially since you're gaining all that life in the way. The Abzan Mirrors were really awkward with this because you'd have these big slugfest going back and forth. And they'd just be like, and I hit you and gain 12 life. And then you hit me and I take 12 damage and you gain 12 life. And what's going on? And nonsense back and forth either way. But again, Sorin also, if he manages to actually build up to an emblem, will just shut down a lot of decks. So I think he deserves an honorable mention, even if he's not here. I think he might end up being the planeswalker that does more if Abzan continues to rock the house. Whereas if Jeskai continues, then we'll keep getting more Sarkhan. So both of the Planeswalkers, highly relevant.
Yeah.
Pretty awesome.
So I jump back to the infographic to see where Sorin fell. He is in 25% of the top decks.
That's good for a two-color card.
Yeah. Especially one that people initially were like, eh, I'm not super impressed by. And of course, compared to Sarkhan, he's not super impressive.
Yeah.
He's not flashy, and oh my god, did you read that? Holy crap. But he's still really freaking good.
Well, he allows you to play a deck with good cards in it, and he makes those cards backbreakingly good. Whereas Sarkhan doesn't really care what else you've got going on. He's here to do a job, and that's to kill you. And he'll do it, but it's a lot more intuitive of, oh yeah, I just play him, and then they take four, right? Awesome. And in this case, it's, oh, I play him, and then I attack with these guys, and hey, look, I got a vampire, or hey, look, I gained like 15 life, and all their guys are dead. It's pretty great.
Seems fine.
Yeah. So that was top five cards.
Top five cards. Do, 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 do. So you'd think we'd be done with the Pro Tour by now. What with the, let's see, the new decks. And Aurelax being a poor sport or not, and the infographic of all the new stuff and the disqualifications. But no, we're not done yet.
But wait, there's more.
Now, how much would you pay? Yes.
Would you buy that for a dollar?
I'd buy that for a dollar. I love that guy. What is it with me in Detroit lately? I don't even know. So, Hélène Bergeau showed up during the lunch break one day. Saturday? Sunday? Doesn't matter.
Yeah, I think it was Saturday.
To talk about some changes to some things, like she does. The last time she showed up at a Pro Tour to talk about some things, she was talking about the move to the preliminary PTQs and regional PTQs.
Yes.
And so now, she's talking about the change to Friday Night Magic.
But that affects me, Chewie.
Oh, no. You'd better pay attention then, William.
Okay.
So- what the hell? So the long and short of it is, basically, if you can dream up a format of any sort, you can sanction it for Friday Night Magic.
Yes.
So before, you could do what? Standard, modern, draft.
Like standard, modern, draft. Like that was pretty much it.
Maybe sealed? Like, I don't know what you could do, but those are the only things.
You could do limited. You could do standard, limited, and you could do standard and modern constructed. They wouldn't sanction legacy to my knowledge.
I don't think so.
And they certainly didn't let you do things outside of that.
Yeah. So
I mean, it was a big deal when modern was allowed to be a Friday Night Magic format, because for a long time people were like, well, I mean, we want to do modern, but there's no tournaments. And so they allowed it in.
So now I'm going to run through the list because it's funny to do so. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Standard constructed, modern constructed, legacy constructed, block constructed.
So, yeah.
Sealed limited, draft limited, commander, two-headed giant, wizard's tower. What the hell is that? I've never even heard of that.
Wasn't it a board game in the 80s?
I think it was. Okay, so now for Friday Night Magic, you can play this board game. Gotcha. That'll be relevant later. Emperor, star, archenemy, plane chase, Solomon draft, pick a pack draft. What? Winston draft, not Winchester draft, which pisses me off. Backdraft, rotisserie draft, reject rare draft, tribal wars, Vanguard. Vanguard? Build your own standard. Block party. Invent your own format. Oh, there's Winchester draft. Any combination of the above. Grand Melee, Cube Draft, and Mini Masters. These are all able and allowed to be sanctioned for Friday Night Magic. Now, this will not affect, I'm going to go ahead and guess, like 98% of everybody.
Pretty much.
Because stores are pretty set in their ways and they want to make money. So if they take one Friday Night Magic a month and go, you know what? This one's going to be Backdraft. Yay. Rotisserie Backdraft. Yay.
Because they don't want to go home.
Yeah, they don't want to go home. And like three people will show up. They don't want to make money either. So I think this is primarily for bigger stores that do two Friday Night Magics a week.
What she was talking about was the idea that they're going to try to make it easier so that if you have a larger event, you know, for your F&M, you can actually just go, okay, well, we have the limited over here and then standard and then modern. And then you've got like Clues over in the corner whining about no legacy. Well, now Clues can play legacy.
Except they have legacy every weekend at his store anyway, which I'll remind.
But now they can do it for F&M, which they couldn't before.
I'll remind everyone that it's Atomic Empire in Durham, North Carolina. It's a great shop. You should check it out. Or you could come on down to Lucky's Card Shop in Greensboro, North Carolina, which is a pretty good shop. And you should check it out.
It's pretty good. I mean, they didn't have any diet soda, but, you know.
So, yeah. So stores can do, like the bigger stores especially, that have like a strong casual group of guys too, can do their usual standard or draft or whatever F&M, and then over on the side they can do a commander F&M for,
like, this would be like Jack's store. Like, if Jack were here right now, he would be really upset about the idea of competitive commander, but secretly he'd be happy that he can actually get F&M promos. So
that brings us to something else. F&M promos are changing.
Yeah.
No longer is one reserved for the winner. So if you win F&M, you don't necessarily get a promo anymore. I don't think she said how they were going to be.
She said they're up to the store.
Oh, so chances are the winner will still get one. But it's not required anymore.
Right.
So if your store is more interested in a like the more fun of F&M rather than the competition of it.
Well, I've been to one store once where the way that it worked was the person who came in first could get the F&M promo with some packs, or they could leave the F&M promo on the table and get an extra pack. And then the person in second got the same option. And the idea was that if someone has like no desire for the promo, because this was also back when they were all like extended cards that nobody cared. And so it would be a case of, well, I don't really want that. I'd rather just have another pack. And then they would like give them the option to do that if they wanted to. And then it would just sort of feed its way down the list to the other people who actually want the card. Which is pretty cool. Cause what they saw was that whoever would get first, someone else would go over, hey, I'll trade you a pack for that. And they're like, why don't we just make that actually something we do? So
that makes sense.
And now you can do things like that a bit easier if that's what you want to do.
Yeah. And the different store levels are getting different amounts. So, the core level stores, I think she said get 5, and the advanced stores get 10, and I forgot how many advanced plus get.
15.
Was it 15? Okay.
Yeah, it just scaled up like that.
To be given out as determined by the store. So the bigger stores get a lot more promos, which means a lot more people can get them, which is actually pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm really hoping this is one of those things where that just means the bigger stores go, well, we've got 15 of these things. Let's just run like 4 small events rather than a big one and the winner gets 3 or something stupid like that. That would be annoying. I think it's very likely that what this will actually enable, if they have the manpower and the space for it, is for rather than going to a, you know, like a 6-round F&M, you just have several flights and just spread out the promos that way so it's not awkward. Because one of my local stores will do 2 or 3 draft pods rather than stick everyone in one, just because that way no one's there until like 2 in the morning.
Yeah.
And this is much easier to split up that way. That said though, because some of the formats that are available, it could actually be possible that you'll go to one of your store and they'll have like the normal, like standard modern constructed and like maybe one limited event for people who didn't show up with decks. And that's totally viable. And then, you know, they actually have the option on the side of like, oh, you showed up 20 minutes late and someone else showed up 20 minutes late. You guys want to do F&M mini masters? Get those planeswalker points.
But,
and they can do that. I do not expect the vast majority of these formats to be relevant. One thing we didn't list before but is allowed is also vintage. So if you have the most baller people who have their approximately automobile valued deck that want to play for that F&M promo, they can. One thing that's not specified is whether or not they allow you to sanction events with proxies. I'm guessing that's still a no in the absence of them saying otherwise.
Yeah.
And that might be why they didn't spit out vintage.
I would guess no. Yeah.
That's my assumption. However, this does mean that if you just show up with your casual deck that might have cards that aren't allowed in certain things, they could still invent a, you know, whatever you want format and let you play it with other people who have that and effectively have, you know, weird pseudo vintage time. Like if you and your 3 friends all just never ever want to be friends again, you can have your Sherazade Showdown. And this is the only time that will ever actually get you anything, but it looks like a lot of fun all around. I'm pretty happy with this change. And it also means that if you have a problem with your store always running the one thing, you can tell them, hey, let's run this other thing. You can do that now and it'll be cool.
If they'll do it, which is
always, do it. I mean, they don't have to do any of it, but it's nice to give options. I would not recommend going into your store this Friday and saying, all right, so what we want to do next week is we want to have a Modern Masters rotisserie backdraft. Because if you say that, they're going to stare at you, and then they're going to ask why you want to draft with a chicken. And then from there, if you explain all this, they're going to be, no. And then you've wasted everyone's time.
No, nobody said Boston Market, damn it.
No, that's next door, and they closed.
Okay, so the other thing is the regional PTQ locations have been revealed for, let's see, April 25th of next year. It's the first round of the regional PTQs, which you'll remember, regional PTQs are the things that the preliminary PTQs feed into, okay?
Yep.
And that's, yeah, that's, there's a list here. Hey, look, Greensboro, North Carolina, I bet that's Lucky's.
Pretty likely.
Yay.
Yeah, these were the ones that I was annoyed before about the fact that if you win a PTQ, you then have to go to another tournament. Like, what would have been a PTQ before, you just win it, and then great, now you're off to the Pro Tour, and they give you, like, a ticket, and all that's fine.
And you were so close.
Yeah, and, well, that's not related to this, but yeah.
Yeah.
And now the transition is you win the preliminary PTQ, which there are supposed to be a lot more of, because a lot more stores are qualified to run them now. you win that, and then you get to go to this other one. And my big criticism was that, well, now you're paying to go to two tournaments because you have to travel. And, you know, presumably you would have to travel because, you know, these things are not likely in your town. And
unless you're me.
Unless you're Chewy. And it's just added expense for the fact that you've already won a tournament and your opportunity to go to another tournament didn't seem like it was going to be well rewarded because they just vaguely said there'd be some compensation. But now I've got a better idea of what that is. So do you want to tell them what it is, Chewy?
I don't know. You seem to be all over it. I'll let you handle it.
Oh, okay. So if you make it through your preliminary PTQ and you qualify to go to these regional PTQs and you actually have to go to it, when you arrive, they're going to give you a promo card for making it. And this isn't you have to place there, but you have to show up and you have to actually like sit down for the event and they'll give you the special promo card. The promo card that they're starting with, like the inaugural card for this, is a special promo Liliana of the Veil, which is pretty sweet. I mean, it's the same Steve Argyle art as before, but it's in the new card frame. So these will be something that you can differentiate from the old ones. They had the little swoosh for their set symbol. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a special promo thing. Presumably it's a foil, but they didn't actually say it was, but we're assuming.
Yeah. And of course, down in the what this is section of the bottom, which is new, you know, with this new card frame, it actually says regional PTQ.
So that's pretty cool.
It is.
It's one of those things where you look at it and you're thinking, man, they were originally planning on putting her in standard and everything. So I'm wondering if the ones going forward will probably be cards that are expected to do well in standard just as that extra bonus. But for right now, she's a every other format superstar. So it's not like you're really getting hosed.
Yeah.
Now that said, the only criticism I've seen of it at all is people that wanted it to be alternate art, because we got to complain about something.
Oh, for God's sake, shut up.
I know. because it's beautiful art. Like, the Liliana of the Veil art is great. And it's one of those things where it's not like it's just going to blend in with your other foils, because it's in the new template, which the other one never was. And it's your bragging card. It's your, like, look at what I qualified for card.
Yeah.
And if you have to make the trip to this, you can probably find a collector that's going to want to buy it, because once you qualify for one of these things, you don't get to go in a tournament and win another one. You're just done until you get to the big one, and you only get the one for showing up anyway. So these are not going to be just all over the place.
Yeah.
It's not like Grand Prix foil, which anyone who is willing to travel can collect a ton of. Like, there's a limited number of seats for these things, and there will be a limited number of them, so the collectors will probably be willing to buy it off of you and offset the fact that you maybe had to get a hotel room, unless you just want to keep it, in which case even better. So that's how this is going to work starting next year.
Yep. And that's awesome. So now that's everything from the Pro Tour, right?
I think so.
Nope. Well.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. This was that Pro Tour.
They did announce one other thing. You're right.
So a Magic the Gathering strategy board game was announced. Nope. And the only information we have is a date, October 16th, and Essen. And Essen is the location of Spiel, which is an annual, it's quoted here in Gathering Magic, an annual gaming conventions, that's plural for no reason, of great import. So the picture is of a board game box and an iPad that has the play symbol on it. That's a little weird. And a little like Chandra, and a little Chandra mini.
Yep.
And that's what we have.
That's all we know.
So,
although there is a date.
Which I said.
Yeah. And like, that's presumably when we're going to find out more, because by the time you're listening to this, it's probably like tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, that's when Spiel happens. So sometime during Spiel, it'll be, you know, revealed or whatever. So.
Yeah. So we don't know much now, but hey, if you like Magic the Gathering, but you're tired of playing Magic the Gathering when your friends come over, here's another way you can play Magic the Gathering.
Yeah. Hopefully it's not like a Skylanders thing.
Oh, that would be miserable.
Well,
they have enough of my money. That's very unlikely to happen in a strategy board game, but we'll see, because that iPad does make me nervous.
Yeah. So there's that. Let's see. What else?
We can talk about what wasn't announced if you want to.
The three simultaneous limited GPs in unspecified locations that we were really expecting to hear something about, like Modern Masters 2. This weekend?
Yeah, that was not announced.
Yeah. Dicks.
We also know nothing more about the Commander set that's coming out in like a month.
Oh, good lord. It is coming out soon, isn't it?
I really thought they were going to at least spoil one of the other Planeswalker commanders, but no, we got nothing. Someone asked on Twitter about it, and I think it was Morrow or someone else replied saying that they'd give us something by the end of October, but we were kind of expecting them to at least show one of them because it's such an easy thing to build a hype train for, but.
And it's a pro tour.
Yeah. And it's a pro tour when they make these kinds of announcements. So I thought they were going to pop up and go, look, everybody, it's Slovad. And then we laugh and laugh and then we move on, but that is not what happened.
It would make Clues happy.
It would.
Cause Goblin Planeswalker.
Yeah. It's probably going to be Jaya, but we'll find out.
We'll find out.
Someday.
So let's see. Hey, Bill.
Yeah.
You put a product placement in here that we're not getting paid for, so.
That's true. But the people care.
To be fair, we're not getting paid for the other product placements, so.
Yeah. So the long and short of it is that, in honor of John Celso's birthday, the wonderful people at UltraPo decided to release the bear punching playmat. It is a Savage Punch picture with that bear getting punched, slow motion style, with his tongue out and everything. And if you want to get that and look down at it and then feel bad for the bears of the world, you can do that.
Yeah. It's at ultrapro.com and it's $21.99.
Yeah. This is one of those things that it actually makes me more happy when they say, you know, there's been a lot of demand for this. Maybe we should actually make it.
Maybe we should. And then to be fair, that's pretty freaking sweet.
Yeah, I honestly thought it was going to be the game day, Matt, when they first announced the art. It just seemed like the kind of thing that it would be.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess we could announce that. Game day is this weekend, guys. Oh, yeah.
How about that?
Yeah, so for those of you who just saw these amazing net decks and you too want to go get in the Abzan mirror match that takes the entire round, go for it. But it is not for this play, Matt. So.
By the way, as of the time of this recording, it is John Celso's birthday. He is one of the hosts of Tap and Sack, who recently hit 100 and got a sweet new logo, and they're, oh crap, what's the t-shirt thing that they have to sell a certain number before it fires? Is it Teespring? Is that what it's called?
It's something like that, I don't remember exactly.
Yeah, their Teespring thing fired as soon as I tweeted the link for it, so I'm gonna take credit for that.
Yeah, that's how that works.
Because as soon as I tweeted the link, someone replied and goes, and it's fired. And I was like, yes. So that was me. Thank you. But
use your shirt powers for good.
Yeah. So everybody check that out. Not the shirt, but Tap and Sack. And it's Celso's birthday. He also writes for MTG Bro Deals.
Yeah.
Which and Jack would say if he was here.
Yeah. And he had me on for an episode, which was weird. Like, both of us were on in the last 10 run up to 99 or 100, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was cool.
Yeah. I like those guys.
Yeah, they're fun.
Well, except for Houston. I like John.
He wasn't there when I was there, so I had fun.
Oh, that's awful.
Yeah, like he missed out on 99. Like his friend was doing great in a big event, and so he physically couldn't get there.
I remember that.
But yeah, so I was on, and it was cool.
Yeah.
So that happened, and yeah, if you're playing against Celso and you bust out this playmat, he will cry. So.
And not like the good kind either.
So. No, it'll be the kind that makes you feel bad. And then when he punches you, you kind of deserve it. And then he just goes, bear's revenge. And then, you know, I mean, he's a bear. Why are you playing Magic with a bear?
That's true.
You knew this was going to happen.
So, so one more thing. I got an email from our buddy Kim Ho, who, if I remember correctly, is Canadian. Canadians. Those guys.
They're like real people, but nicer.
But nicer. Oh, I miss Schofield. So, Kim Ho sent me an email that says, I don't think this has been mentioned in most venues, but please check the attached. I'm not there yet. In short, last week I bought From the Vault Annihilation on Magic Online, which I didn't realize they were doing. And
it was the one that was delayed by like a month because they needed to focus on fixing it.
Oh, yeah, okay. He said he wasn't really checking the price. So he put it in the basket and bought it and whatever. He says it seems the charged price was incorrect and he was given back the difference in tickets as well as additional tickets to make up for it.
Huh.
And he sent me a screenshot of, no, don't save it, just open it, of the email. Here it is. It came to our attention yesterday afternoon that From the Vault Annihilation was inadvertently mispriced at $39.99 in the Magic Online store. We have corrected the price to $34.99, $5 more than it should have been. That's not the right sentence. That sentence was put together incorrectly.
The flying copypasta monster has been here.
Yeah, he was like, burp, burp. But anyway, so essentially they had it for $5 too much. They found it out. They fixed it. And they said, a number of sets were purchased at the incorrect price. Our records indicate that you're one of them, blah da 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 da. Because of this, we've granted you 5 event tickets to your Magic Online account. Oh, he blocked out a number. I was like, what is this? There's a big blank space. He edited it because he doesn't trust me. Thanks, Kim. I'm trustworthy. In order to make up the difference in price, as well... God, this is written by someone that doesn't speak English. So, okay. Because of this, we have granted 5 event tickets to your Magic Online account in order to make up the difference in price. Okay, now it does. As well as an additional 5 event tickets in appreciation of your business for a total of 10 event tickets. Sorry about that. We screwed up, but we fixed it. I hope you don't mind. Please don't hate us. Thank you, Magic Online team, Wizards of the Coast. I paraphrased that last bit, but that's what it says.
Yeah. I think they gave the extra tickets to also offset the fact that they are not giving you cash. So
yeah, sort of like.
Admittedly, if it was listed at 39 and you got it at 39, they were under no obligation to do this. It's just good PR, but it's good they fixed it anyway.
Yeah. And it's good that they went beyond that. So
yeah. So if you're one of those people who's just waiting for a chance to complain about Magic Online, don't do that this time. They acknowledged what they did. They fixed it.
They made it right. And then they gave you some more to make it more right. So
yeah.
They say 2 wrongs don't make a right, but you know what? 3 lefts make a right every time.
Every time.
Unless you're in non-Euclidean space, and that's just, let's not get into that.
Well, yeah, I mean, then you're in that crazy world where you fly north to get to the South Pole, Final Fantasy.
Dicks. So, that's that. There's one more Magic Online thing here, Bill. What you got?
Oh, so, I asked online earlier if people actually wanted to hear Magic Online updates, because they generally get released on Tuesdays, so by the time I'm talking about it and then you're hearing it, it's a weekend some days ago. But they said yes, they wanted to hear about it, so I'm going to give a very brief Magic Online rundown each week. This week's main rundown is just the fact that the Cons of Tarkir release events are going to be over in a week or so. Yeah, Wednesday, October 22nd, downtime. They're taking out the Cons release events, so get those out of your system if you want to do that, and then they will bring in all of the normal Magic Online fare for Cons of Tarkir. So the block constructed queues, the dailies will be back, the draft queues, the dailies, the sealed queues, all that nonsense will be back, and everything will be per normal. So that is the be all and end all of the current Magic Online news. If you would like to know more, they put out releases every Tuesday, usually letting you know, reminding you what's going on in the Wednesday downtime and letting you know what they fixed. Because they're always fixing stuff because it's still Magic Online. So that's that, yeah.
Yeah. Lots of people have been complaining about Magic Online because that's what you do nowadays.
Yeah, it became the thing that kids complain about. And by kids, I don't mean like actual kids. I mean people who sit around and complain all the time like kids do. You know, Twitter.
Not only that, but a bunch of the pros, most notably Paolo.
Yeah.
I saw him say that let me try to remember this. He said he's not playing, it's not that he is playing Hearthstone because he likes it better than playing Magic, it's that he's playing Hearthstone because he likes it better than playing Magic Online. He's playing Magic Online for the videos that he has to do, and then he stops. You know, so he streams more Hearthstone because of it, because it's less than streaming Magic Online. Now, to be fair, I hear that from various sources that both Magic Online and the Wizards website are actually getting better by increments. So,
yeah, I mean, I've seen small changes in the Wizards website that I appreciate. And whenever I see anything wrong with the Wizards website and I either tweet it at someone or message them, they do fix it pretty quickly. So aside from the whole top 8 decklist thing, which is more a matter of someone needs to actually put a little bit of effort into that rather than it's something that doesn't work and needs fixing. They've done an okay job with it. I will say that the Magic Online griping has become one of those things where I still don't think it's really a 100% fair comparison to Hearthstone, because Hearthstone exists for this, whereas Magic is completely.
Now, this is someone who, at one point while Bill was talking, I pulled up Hearthstone on my iPad and actually poked around because I recently opened a couple new cards, and I was like, I wonder if I fit these in a deck real quick while he's talking. And then I realized that I wasn't listening, so I closed it again. But I've been playing a lot of Hearthstone lately, and yeah, it's not fair. It's not. It's like trying to compare Tetris to Super Mario Brothers. You know, they're two different things.
Yeah.
Sure, they're both.
And they're both going to have terrible movies.
Sure, they're both video games in my description, and they're both card games in, you know, the Hearthstone Magic Online thing, but that's where it stops. So.
Yeah. Although, also keep in mind that, realistically, the vast majority of the people that are playing Magic Online who are complaining right now are the ones who are playing it because they enjoy playing physical Magic and they want to get better at it, and Magic Online is where you go to do that, and so here's a case where they're still going to do that because they were never playing it because they wanted to play an online game and hey, Magic. They want to play better Magic, and that means they have to put up with this. Mind you, there are a lot of people that actually straight up enjoyed Magic Online. They will always complain about it, but they like playing it. It's one of those things. It'll get better. They obviously have enough money and investment to make it better. It's just not going as quickly as many of us would like, and we're frustrated. So we'll get there. And in the meanwhile, I'll continue to give you guys quickie updates each week because people who listen to this show do play Magic Online and, for understandable reasons, don't sit around on the Wizards website looking for updates on it. So I will add that to my part of the rotation.
Well, isn't he sweet?
I try.
Oh, not you, the guy I was playing Hearthstone against.
Aw, well, he probably is sweet.
Actually, no. I really hate Hearthstone players.
From what I've heard, they're not good people.
It's like, okay, I have a small off-topic rant, which I actually haven't done in a good couple weeks. Psst, I wasn't here last week.
Yeah. But,
like, when you have me dead on board, I don't concede most of the time because I've had too many people miss lethal and just not kill me.
Mm-hmm.
But so I don't concede hardly ever. I'm like, well, you know, if it's an obvious thing, then I'll just let you kill me. But if I'm at 4 and there's nothing I can do about it, and you've got like a 5-power dude and a 5-power dude, just kill me. Don't cast the spell and kill my dude and do this and pump your guy and kill my dude and da 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 and then kill me. Just freaking kill me.
Oh yeah, that's. Oh, you mean like when you're playing Magic and you have the lightning bolt in your hand and you decide you're gonna play out your hand first? Yeah, that's annoying.
Yeah, like, in person, it's different. Like, if I was playing Magic with Mike, let's say, and Mike was sitting here in my apartment, and I'm like, okay, look, don't hate me, but I've got to do this because it's so cool. Because it's Mike, and he's my buddy, and he will actually be like, okay, what you got? But on the other side of Hearthstone, you're not a person. You're just someone who's eating up my life, and I hate you.
And there's no chat, so you can't become a person.
Yeah, there's no way to interact with your opponent other than 6 pre-programmed statements. Thank God, because, you know, anonymity turns you into a dick. So.
Yeah.
So thank goodness there isn't chat, but I really wish they would add a, would you hurry the hell up, chat bubble. Like, there's threaten, but your character just shouts out, like, the light shall burn you. Shut up.
Really? Is that how you threaten people?
That's what one of the things the priest says or something like that.
So if I go to like a Magic event and I start saying that, people will get it?
Maybe, if they play Hearthstone. Justice demands retribution. Say that one, that sounds better.
That might be a lot more fun, yeah.
Justice ducks, demand retribution. But anyway, yeah. And it just
deflecting palm it is.
Because I won't just concede, like, because again, I've had way too many people miss lethal and not kill me, and then I win, because you weren't paying attention. But, so I'm not going to concede, but don't waste my freaking time. I don't care that you still had all these, and I'm not going to be able to go, hey, that's cool, because there's no option to do that. So just kill me. Like, if I've got 6 cool things to do, and my opponent's at 4, and I've got a 4-power dude, I poke the 4-power dude, and I drag him up to your face, and I lift my finger, and then I win. And then I go to the next game because I don't want to waste your time. These things apply in Magic too, but in Magic, I can tell you this to your face and be like, will you quit screwing around and kill me? Like I did to the guy at the pre-release. Kill me! Anyway.
Yeah. In general, after a certain point, it's just going, hey, look at all this. It's like the still got all these, but as annoying as the still got all these guy is, he normally still got all these after he's finished the game and you have the option of leaving.
It's true. Yeah, you can ignore him at that point and get up and leave. But yeah, with Hearthstone, people are just so proud of their nonsense that, and you know, they give you daily quests because it's a casual game that you can play for free. So they want to suck your money out. So they give you daily quests, you know, like win 4 matches with this class or destroy 30 minions or something like that. And Brian, my Manipul co-host, was like, well, maybe they're working on a quest and they just need to cast one or two more spells. I'm like, maybe they need to play another freaking game and stop wasting my time.
Yeah, also, whenever you're farming like that, you should just play with your friends.
You can't for the quest like that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, playing again. You have to be playing in play mode, which go to the casual room and do that.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
okay.
It's the ladder and then there's casual.
Because I'm reminded of, like, in Team Fortress 2, where people would be achievement farming. And it was really annoying because it was a team-based game. So you've got the one guy over here who's just doing this one thing and completely ignoring the objectives. Sounds like in the case of that one, it's just someone who's finished the game and they have to win, but they also have to do all this other nonsense. So
I don't know. It drives me up the wall, though. Like, it kills me.
Yeah.
Like, hurry, just kill me. It's like, there's no need to show off. I don't care.
Yeah, as a Magic player, you get used to making them kill you because people screw up and miss games that they should have won all the time. So you kind of wait it out and see what happens.
Yeah, and I don't believe in the honorable suicide. Nope, screw you. You're going to lop my own head off. And I've been known, like, when I see an opponent doing that, I'll just go ahead and hit concede. But the way that Hearthstone works is if your opponent does A, B, C, D, E, like, all in a row, by the time I hit concede, I still have to wait for all that crap to finish. So I've sat there, and there's just enough of a delay. It's like a 5 or 10 second delay from the time they do something to the time I see it, that it's annoying. So I still have to watch them do it and then I concede. Or they kill me before the concede kicks in so it doesn't concede. It's just annoying. But anyway, enough Hearthstone.
Yeah.
If you want to talk Hearthstone, go to Kibler or Palo, or hey, talk to me, whatever. I'm not real good with, it's sort of like Magic. I'm not real good with metagames or what's really big up in the legendary rank, but I can talk cards and how cool they are and what they do. Yeah, let's do it. If you happen to see me on Hearthstone play against me, I'm TMP Chewy is the name you'll see. Send me a friend request, and chances are I will ignore you for several days because I don't see that sort of thing. And then I'll see it, and I'll go, oh, and I'll accept it.
Yeah.
And then say hi, because I had some guy do that to me. It said 6 days ago he sent me a friend request, and I was like, whoops, and I accepted it. Dude has never said anything, so I'm going to unfriend him in a minute. But, like, if I don't know who you are, if you're just one of those randos who likes to – I don't know why I started saying randos all of a sudden. It started yesterday. I don't know why. But if you're just one of those randos who wants to just have as many friends on your list as possible, yeah, I'm not going to be one of those because if I don't know you, I don't want to talk to you.
Yeah.
My friends list right now is the three dorks from the Manipul, Squanto, and Lansdell. I'm like, that's it. And this other guy.
For now.
For – dun, dun, dun. But anyway – so enough of that. Do we have anything else, Bill?
I think that's all the Magic news for right now. Big surprise, the Pro Tour eats everything.
Yeah, including like 3/4 of this long-ass episode.
Yeah. So, yeah, the only other thing, like I said, was that game day's coming up, so go have fun with that.
Yay.
Get your utter end or whatever for top 8-ing.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet.
And that's it. So, yeah.
Ow, broke my own finger. So, word?
I guess we'll start sharing contact info then.
Oh, wait, do I have any other off-topic random things at the end? I missed the first episode of the new season of Walking Dead. Damn it.
I am playing catch-up, so do not tweet things at me. I will kill you.
Ah, catch-up. I'm mustard. Oh, sorry. Made out of laughing heifer.
Yeah, I was going through my mind of, like, what references to that can I make that I can say on Monday Night Magic?
Right? Because there's no swearing.
Things that dodge.
Magic. See my spaceship?
Comb your beard.
This is a dodge. My suit's so tight. Anyway. So I've decided, unless something awful happens, I will be going to Grand Prix New Jersey because I have to. If it's going to either break or come close to breaking any records, I have to be there. So I will be there.
You are an enabler for that sort of thing.
I really am. So I'm talking to some people about a room, and they're not getting back to me. It's Trevor and Renee, who I stayed with in D.C., and then Mike and I stayed with in Roanoke. No, not Roanoke. Richmond. There we go.
Cool.
The other one. And I love those guys. And they write for MTG Bro Deals as well, which is a complete coincidence. It's very strange. And
sometimes they hook you up with your standard deck at the last possible second.
They do. And that's right after they started playing Magic again. How about that?
Yeah, that was fortunate.
But, yeah, I said, hey, Trevor, if we're going to go to Vegas, if we're going to go to New Jersey and we're going to do this, we need to get on it now. And he goes, right, I'll talk to my guy. And I'm like,
you got a guy in New Jersey?
But not only has he got a guy in New Jersey, but he's got a guy in New Jersey that handles hotel rooms. I'm like, is this like a drug dealer, but he's a hotel broker? Like, what is this? You got a guy? He's like, that's probably closer than you'd want to think. And I was like, what?
It's like an FX original movie here.
So I don't know what who his guy is, but
it's okay. He's his guy. You're good. Just don't cross him.
So yeah. So I love Trevor and Renee. They're awesome.
Sweet.
Yeah.
And yeah, the next time I wander in the north direction, it might be wandering into the apparently public pro tour. Like, I don't know that I'm competing because I'm probably not gonna, but I still think it'd be a cool thing to hang out at. DC is not that far away.
Yeah, DC is indeed right there. I used to go there all the time to see my favorite lesbians.
Yeah.
Plus, I went to the Legacy GP that was there, which is not in DC at all.
And when else am I going to get to drive to a pro tour?
This is very true. Dude, we'll drive together. It'll be awesome.
Yeah, road trip.
Which one is that? Is that Fate Reforged or is that the next one?
It's the Fate Reforged one because it's the one that I almost qualified for.
Okay. Yay. Oh, yeah. Because you were like, yeah, if I win this, I get a plane ticket to there. It's like a 25-minute plane trip.
Yeah, it's going to be one of those things where you spend more time sitting there waiting for it to take off than actually flying.
Okay. So that's all I got. So if you're going to be at GPDC, at GP Jersey, then come see me. Track me down. I will be there. I'm going to try to get a press pass, which I managed to do at Star City Events, it seems. And I'll be wandering around with my trusty digital recorder asking people 3 questions. Ha ha!
Yeah, if you want to find them, ask people around. Have you seen a guy with a taser? And you'll find him.
Yeah, or a really fancy lighter is the other thing that people say all the time. So
yeah.
Speaking of which, I got a new Vegas up late over the weekend. Yeah. And I'll get another new one up. This one had, what did I tell you, Bill? 15? 14 or
15? It had a lot of important people in it. Well, by important, I mean like most people are important, but I knew who these ones were. So.
Well, not just that, but I had like 14 or 15 different audio files, which considering I had like almost 100 or right at 100 audio files, that's a lot to go in one episode, so that's good.
Well, yeah, you have to finish this one before they ever get around to announcing another Vegas.
If they are.
Otherwise, people are going to get confused.
And this one is, I think I'm looking at like 4 more episodes, roughly, maybe? Maybe? My next episode is going to be awesome. I got Elaine Bourgeot on to talk at length about Vegas.
Cool.
Like, I've got 2 8-minute files here, and I think they're both her, because we chatted for quite a while. I don't know how much of that will actually make it into 3 questions, but we chatted for quite a while about Vegas and how it was running and all that.
Do you think she's actually got a Green Lantern ring hidden under the bigger rings?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
Because, I mean, like, I'd never actually seen a video of her until the Pro Tour video that I saw yesterday. And I'm like, wow, if she hits you, that's like evidence. They can identify her. This is Ace Ventura nonsense.
Yeah. Luckily, I'm pretty sure that's what the heels are for. She just kicks real hard.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, because, I mean, every time I've ever met her, she's had some seriously impressive shoes on, so.
Nice.
But yeah, she's a sweetheart. I first met her in D.C., which, again, wasn't in D.C., and then I ended up at the hotel bar with, let's see, her and Magrini was there, and Omar Hernandez were there, both of which have said they're going to Jersey. Hey, boys, I'm coming. Not that you listen to the show, but you should, you jerks. But
you talk about Legacy enough.
I don't even know if they were there to play very much. Hernandez, Omar was all over Commander that whole weekend. He was just everywhere. Like, are you playing EDH again? He's like, yup. I'm like, holy crap.
Huh?
Because, again, there's a lot to do at a GP other than play in the GP. So that's why I keep telling everyone to go.
Yeah.
But anyway, enough of that. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be awesome, as most GPs are. Yeah, I'm done. So, Bill, where do people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at SqueeGoblinAbob. There's no I in Goblin. And if you follow me there, you can see me talk about all kinds of nonsense. Likewise, if you want me to talk more about Magic Online, tell me what you want me to say, because for the most part, I'm just going to tell you what appears in the news feed. So that's where you can find me there.
Yeah, and for the record, if there's ever anything that anybody thinks we should talk about on Monday Night Magic, by all means, let us know. We might not agree, but we will definitely at least read everything you say. Like, I got the random email from Kim about the from the vault, and I was like, you know what? That needs to be mentioned, because that's good stuff.
I mean, tell us what's going on. We keep an eye out ourselves, but there's way too much going on in the magic world for us to see everything. And if we miss it, we're probably not going to go back to it like a few weeks later, because if it's big enough to last more than a week, we probably would have seen it.
Exactly.
So let us know. We record on Mondays of all days.
Yeah. And our buddy Will Blanks, God bless him, he throws all kinds of stuff into the show notes. And sometimes I look at what he put in here and I go, huh? And I delete it. But he's very thorough. But even Will can't get everything.
Yeah.
So again, let us know if there's ever anything that you think, hey, you guys should talk about this week. As long as it's before Monday night, chances are we haven't recorded yet. Yay.
Yeah.
So with that, you can poke Bill on Twitter, Squeak Goblin Nabob. No, I ain't Goblin. You can poke me on Twitter at the Mana Pool. That is the best way to poke at me so that I'll definitely reply. Email I will read, but I might forget to reply. And I might get lost in the shuffle, which I keep finding things that have gotten lost. Like, oh, I don't remember ever replying to this. Whoops. Because I'm just the worst. So, but you can email me to Chewy, that's C-H-E-W-I-E, at mtgcast.com. And, of course, you can find everything else I do over on themanapool.com. And everything, not everything, but Mike Okuhara, who is one of our more hilarious listeners in Hawaii, actually every Monday, I'm gonna say that, and he didn't do it this week. Let me go look before I start flapping my gums. Yep, here it is. Every Monday, he does his peculiar flavor roundup. There we go. Which is, he goes to Gatherer and hits random card until he gets something that needs new flavor text. And he makes up rejected flavor text for them. And they are usually pretty funny. So this week, for example, the roundup has Ice Cauldron, Liquid Fire, Metronome, and Emrakul.
Bah.
And I just read Emrakul for the first... Just tell you, I'll read this one as a teaser. Emrakul the Aeon's Torn. Not unlike a mullet at rest, Emrakul was business up top and a party down below. And if you look at the art, that's pretty funny.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Go check that out. Every Monday he puts that up. Or you could just go to his... is it a Tumblr? Yeah, his Peculiar Flavor Tumblr, where he does one every day. He puts his favorites up on the Mana Pool once a week, though. So, yay! Speaking of Mana Pool stuff, I'm working on another Vegas. I'm working on another random card of the day. The Pro Tour actually makes me want to go forward with an idea I had a couple weeks ago, but there was nothing to do for it. So look for that on the Mana Pool Tube. The Mana Pool Tube, yes, on YouTube. And I've still got all kinds of ideas in the fire. I got, I got the sample swatch from the Mana Pool Playmat people. And I need to make some changes, unfortunately, which pushes that back by a little while. And I still haven't heard back from the token people on how I can freaking pay for it. So, yeah, that's where I am on Kickstarter stuff. So, yeah, I need to talk to my artist and to the Playmat people about that. Like, the background is really dark, and it's way darker than I wanted it. So I need to see if there's anything that can be done about that, and if not, I'll talk to Jars. Well, I'll talk to them, see if lightening it in the source art will fix it in the print. Because they're printing on black, because it's a playmat, so, you know. But anyway, that's where I am with that, and that should be it for Monday Night Magic, right?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, because it's tomorrow now, so Jesus Christ. So, this has been episode, we didn't say, is it 432? I think it actually is.
Yes. 432.
Yeah. Episode 432 of Monday Night Magic. Thank you all very much for listening. Okay, so real quick, I know we ended the episode, but just what, 15, 20 minutes after we ended the episode?
We were still on the call, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's that recent.
So according to Twitter, this happened 13 minutes ago as of right now. It is 12:34 Eastern Time. Zach Hill has announced on Twitter that the Cons of Tarkir Pro Tour will be his last show as a Pro Tour commentator. He says it's been a good run, but he needs to focus on And he adds, at Dream Directors, which at Dream Directors is the Future Project. Inspiration is the heart of education, thefutureproject.org. Oops, and I accidentally clicked something. But it's a, I should have had this open before we started recording, but I was like, quick, before we hang up, let's record an addendum. To imagine turning, that's the Future Project. Thanks for that. So there, it's uniting passionate people to transform the futures of our youth, our schools, and our nation. And the very first thing I saw when it popped up was Alicia Keys at the top of the screen saying, here's some Future Project stuff. So that's cool. He's going to focus on, you know, making the world a better place instead of entertaining people at the Pro Tour, which seems perfectly fine.
Yeah. I mean, it's good that if you feel like you're spread too thin between multiple projects, it's better to pick one and just go with it, especially if it's one that you're really passionate about. And honestly, you know, he's had a really good run as a commentator. And if he ever just showed up in an event and went, hey, can I totally like get in on this? They'd probably let him. So,
yeah. So since that's actually pretty big news and it's Pro Tour related and it happened right after we got done, wanted to throw that in here. So
yeah, more news.
That's news. So thank you all very much for why I already said that. Bye.
Bye.
And go play some Magic.